Tune in every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, with John Durash of NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Learn how we the people are holding the system accountable with common law grand juries across the nation. John will be taking questions from the Shake and Wake radio chat room. Or you can Skype or call in. Visit NationalLibertyAlliance.org for more information. Every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, John Durash of NationalLibertyAlliance.org on ShakeAndWakeRadio.com. All right, and now your host, John Durash, for Ask John, the Thursday night program. Welcome, John, and all the people from National Liberty Alliance and all your callers.
Good evening, Rick. Thanks. All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance Thursday night open forum, particularly focusing in on talking on the law. Today is Thursday, August 21st, and I guess we'll get right to it. Does anybody have anything particular? What we're going to try to do, we've been doing pretty well at this, is I'm just going to mute. People will be able to unmute themselves and start talking. And, you know, if it gets too much, too many sounds in the background, we may go into Q&A. But I know some people last week got a little frustrated because they never got in, so let's try to yield to each other as we go on and give other people turns, and let's see how that works. So anyway, we're open for a conversation. Anybody have anything particular? Again, tonight is Thursday. We usually talk on the law.
I'm Gabriel from Salinas, California. I was asking...
How you doing, Gabriel?
Fine. How about yourself? I hope everybody's doing good as well.
Yes.
I was just asking if the workers' compensation judges fall under what jurisdiction, if any?
None. Totally administrative. Totally. All that stuff is totally voluntary. And even the Department of Labor. You involve yourself with them through contract. People are employers. They always try to trap them. They play that trap game. But nevertheless, there is no authority they have over. They have no judicial authority whatsoever. So you either kind of go into the system or you don't. If you like those systems, you can get involved with it. If you don't like it, then just get out of it. But
okay.
The compensation board, I guess you're looking to get compensation. I haven't thought about how that would work because you do pay into compensation. You could probably take that into a court of law. If you're being deprived of something that you've been paying in on, I think compensation is considered an insurance, but I never looked into it, so I don't really know. But nevertheless, you pay into something so that if you get injured or something happens, you need to get something out of it. And if they deny you, I wouldn't go to the administrative judges. I would take it right into the court, the Supreme Court. And here in New York, it's called the Supreme Court, but I take it into the state court, whether it's county court or Supreme Court or whatever they call it, but it would be the law of the land.
Okay, well, thank you, John. I appreciate it. You answered a lot of questions that I had.
All right, thanks for calling. Anybody else, just pipe right in.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, hi, John. Can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you. First name, okay. State?
Yep, Tammy Holland, and I'm in New York, and I am Orange
County.
Okay,
Tammy.
Yep,
yes.
I've been waiting for the Thursday meeting. Two things. First question I want to ask is, there's a good friend of my family who had to go to court. They had a couple of charges, and so as they were going through court, the attorney who was defending them actually started running for a city judge or judge seat here in our city. And even right now, the election, you know, that's still going on for the general election for November. And so my question is this. because I feel like, and he's a good attorney, I know him personally, but I just feel like he wasn't able to represent the individual as a defendant real good because he was, in fact, running for a judge seat. And so we weren't familiar with the common law, because had I known this, you know, because I do a lot of networking, and like I said before, I'm an advocate in the community. I have my own business. And so I would have, you know, been able to share, this is what you should do, or this is what you need to do, even before getting attorneys and doing all that. My question is there anything we can do to appeal that that decision? Because like I said, the attorney had to already, and I'm just saying this, you know, out up front, he had already have known that he was going to run for this judge seat because it was something that had been contemplated from our city government, the council, for a while. It was just a matter of actually getting it passed through legislation and through New York State, because the county is the one that paid for our judges in our cities. And so he had already been contemplating that. And so once he actually did do the announcement, he never excused himself from defending that individual. He continued till the case was over, even though I believe he could have probably done a better job, and he may have put more work in it, you know, because he wasn't running for that city position. Right, and it's not a you can either get appointed or get elected. His specific seat was an elected seat as opposed to.
Were you in the Supreme Court?
No, they was in the county court.
Okay, county court is a court of record here in New York. So, can you just give me an idea of what the case was about? You don't have to get into details.
It
just
was
what kind of case is it?
It was about some charges. With some women, with some prostitution. I think they may have been following him or checking him with some women, with some prostitution at a hotel. Now, what
right,
I did
we don't
tonight,
have to get into
I,
the details. So,
right,
okay,
right. What I did, I have a number of people I brought on this call tonight. I want to introduce them to the NLA, and I know you guys talked about, you know, one bring one, you know, and so. I brought a couple of people. I have the family member, the defendant's sister, who is, and she may already be on the line already. And she'll, if she got questions, she'll plug into the Q&A. But I also have another advocate who me and her, we work together. She's one of my partners for one of the organizations. And so I had them on tonight because, you know, there's a number of different cases, not just only in Orange County, in a lot of counties, and we know from everything that's going on. So
right.
I'm just curious on
right, well,
if...
the reason why he didn't defend you as well as he should have had nothing to do with him running for office. It had to do with the fact that he's a bar attorney, and his first allegiance is to the bar. His second allegiance is to the court, and his third allegiance is to you, the person who pays the bill. And you
right.
pay for him to have his allegiance to two other places. Now, he's
okay.
no doubt given you did an injustice to you, and I'll tell you why. I mean, let me just ask you a question. Did you do a sworn affidavit and get it notarized in front of a are you the defendant, or who's the defendant?
Well, no, the defendant is good friends of me and my family. His sister
okay.
Should be on the line because I've been
okay.
folding this for a while.
Okay.
Because I
is
know.
She, so she's the defendant. The question is, and I know already know the answer to this.
No,
but
she's
I'll
not
the
defendant. The defendant is her brother, but she's the sister to the defendant because right now he is incarcerated.
Okay, so I will probably assure you that he did not write an affidavit and sign it in front of a notary. That's correct. I mean, I don't know if you have this knowledge.
She's on the line, but remember, she can't plug in. She might already put in for the Q&A, but she can't really answer.
Oh,
I
no,
would have
just do is press star 6. She'll unmute. We're not in Q&A right now. We're just an open conversation. Star 6?
I want to pipe in with some of my statutory knowledge. There's very strict rules when somebody's running for a judgeship, whether he's a judge or he's an attorney running for a judge. There's a point there that they can no longer act because what happens is it becomes
that's
a conflict of interest. In other words, for them as a judge. I know it's more serious for a judge, but anybody that's running for a judgeship, If they have a position in government where they're, well, look at, he's in the court. He's an officer of the court. He's not supposed to do that during the campaign. That's a felony. So you got to look into that statute. I don't know if it works both ways. I know a sitting judge can't do it, and I'm pretty sure an attorney who's running to be a judge should not be in the court fighting cases because he could be doing things and gaining votes so that people say, well, if you get in as judge, you do this for me or whatever.
Correct. Thank you. And I just let me just grab on to that. Sorry, John, that gentleman that just spoke. And that's what my thought is. Like I said, I went to school for criminal justice, and I was going to end up being a lawyer, you know, but I got married, got kids, and that's not how it worked out. But my kids are grown now, and so I'm able now to do the things that I really want to do because my sons are finishing well. And that's my exact thought.
If there is a statute, it sounds like there probably is, then they have to be adhered to the statute, and you can have the judgment arrested, have an arrest of judgment because of fraud in the court, because of that. And all you got to do is write it up the right way. Yeah?
Arrested judgment, you said, John?
An arrest of judgment, yes. Huh. And because, you know, he was in violation of a code, he never should have, the case is tainted. It has to be reheard.
Now, I got a question also. John, a gentleman that just gave some input, I want to know, can I give him my number? Because, you know, we're all fighting in our own little corners, lighting up as much as possible with the hopes that eventually with NLA, we'll all come together and just light up the whole place. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Light up the whole room. And so we have to, and I would really love if we could, you know, have the opportunity to interact or network with one another in such a way, not to put them on the spot or, you know, any of that, but just to get some information that maybe one person may not have or one caller, knowing, though, that we're in this together, we're here for a reason, and we came to make a difference on the simple fact that the judge, the courts, the law, the system is not doing what it should. It's not even legal. I want to find out, can you give that gentleman my
what
number?
You really mean is it's not even lawful. So I have
right.
to get used
my
to
fault.
Using that word too, because I say that from time to time.
Okay,
but yeah,
well,
go give him your phone number.
I gotta warn you. I know just enough to make me dangerous. That's what this call is for, so that we can put our heads together. And the
right.
only reason I know that is because I ran for office and I was in an office. And when you run for office, you know, they tell you all the things that you can and can't do. And I know that that was a statute. So, you know, and like John says, there's a lot of ways of fighting this. And even the original case under common law would have never flown, probably.
Right. You can have it arrested. You can have the judgment arrested for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. You can have it arrested for lack of personam jurisdiction. You could have it arrested because it was fraud in the court and you were unknowingly brought into a foreign court. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can beat all these cases. Now, they're all uphill battles. And judges don't like when you come back on that, and so it's an uphill battle, and you got to be able to be prepared to fight that battle. But the one that you got, that is probably the best one to use, and leave the other stuff aside as backup ammunition, and go in after them. And the fact that that there is a code that this is tainted. This case has got to be thrown out and retried. Now, let me ask you a question quickly. Was he in jail during the time period of the trial or only after the trial?
Once they arrested him, they set such a high bail that he has never had the opportunity to come out. And it just seemed like, especially with all of the new appointees.
How much bail did they set?
I don't know if it was maybe, I don't know if it was 500,000 or it
oh
was
my
really
goodness,
high.
What did he murder somebody?
I don't know, it might have been a million. It was, because I've been following the case.
Yeah, well, there again, you got the same problem. You got to also understand that the court you were in, the jurisdiction you were in, it was a nisi prius court. It had no authority to fine or incarcerate. So people don't know that, but that's the
right.
facts. And you have to be able to, you see, when you battle those things, you have to have a little bit of a background. You got to have some common law background, and you need to get that. You can get that on our website. We've got,
right.
You've been going through the Thornton tapes?
Right, because you gave me that other information, so I've been familiarized.
Right. You get on that page, and you study the Constitution, you study the Thornton tapes. You can also download our free court access course, which is just a book. And it'll teach you how the process and the procedure and the forms and how to, it gives you an anatomy of a court case. And it really gives you a good overview of what a case looks like from beginning to end on paper. And so you can do all that. You got to remember, we teach you everything, even the BS stuff, because that's how they deal with things. We don't get involved in discovery. Discovery does not come to play in common law. Either you have the goods or you don't. Everybody's got their positions and they got their witnesses and the stories are told. And then the decision is made. Going into the discovery, going on fishing trips, that has nothing to do with common law. We don't partake in that. Also,
right.
There's no such thing as summary judgment, which often they'll do. Also, it is a required, since they claim it to be a crime, it's required to have a trial by jury. There's got to be at least 12 people on that jury, and they got to be free. The jury has got to be able to decide both law and jurisdiction, and if not, then again, it's fraud on the court. Jury tampering. The judge tampered with the jury. And so there's 1,000 ways to beat these court cases. Just about any court case you go into, they break the law all the time on all of them. Doesn't matter. I could just pull them out of my hat and go in there and make the arguments. And I know they haven't done them because they never do an affidavit of truth from anybody, from any side. They never have personam jurisdiction because they're always in those silly foreign courts that has nothing to do with we the people. There's just so many problems there. But the best way to get this thing over with is to do what Gerard came up with, that idea, get a new trial, and then give him a real hard time with the jurisdiction. First of all, that's excessive bail. And I'm not sure where we would find information, but I know there's statutes on this. They can't have excessive bail. Look, the bail has got to meet what they claim to be the crime. The other thing, it sounds like there's no crime here at all anyway. I mean, you know, this has something to do with prostitution, you say?
Right, and these ladies were, from what the paper said, these ladies said that they decided to work with him or go with him or be his women because he was going to take care of them and feed them and clothe them. That's what the paper, that's what the article says from the DA now.
Mm-hmm.
So they agreed to be with him, I guess, and do whatever they were already doing before he came into contact, you know, as long as he provided housing, food, and that's just what he did.
Right.
So,
well, you know, it sounds like it's a moral situation. Maybe I don't know. I don't want to make no judgment on that. But certainly there's no, as long as there's no injured party, did anyone make a complaint that there was an injured party somewhere?
No one did anything.
Okay, so then there is no injured party, there is no crime.
Then he got the women to start saying, well, this happened, that happened. From my understanding, no one had done anything previously before they was following him or watching him, something like that I read. And then they start talking to the girls, you know, and what was he doing?
Yeah, we don't need to get into the details on it. Again, you know, it's a moral question, and I don't want to get into that. But
right.
As far as the lawful side of the things, you know, look at people do what people do. People do things they shouldn't do, and people do things they should do, you know. So everybody has to, you know, control their own lives however they feel fit to do that. As long as you don't injure another person or corrupt the morals of a minor, and you do these things in the privacy of your own place, the government doesn't belong there. So, all of these things, look, you got 1,000 things you can battle it on. Use the one with the guy, the fact that he's running for a judge.
Door that I wanted to go with, or the door to open using that, because I too ran for city council. I ran for a government office in 2013. So as the other gentleman said, he's in fact correct. There were things that we were told you could and could not do, and this specific attorney running for a court judge violated that in the point that he took somebody's case or had their case and decided he wanted to run and made the announcement and everything. So he needs to himself.
So let me explain what you need to do, okay?
Okay.
Now, this is going to be an uphill battle because, you know, look, They give you a real hard time. At this point, he's been incarcerated without a crime by an EC Prius court. His unalienable rights have been violated. You can file into the courts and move it into the federal courts and file it there. Then okay, you can come in as a next friend.
What is that called, John? A what?
Which? An EC Prius court?
A what?
Nisi Prius. N-I-S-I. Nisi Prius. I think that's P-R-E-I-S, if I remember.
P-R-E-I-S,
I think. Is that how you spell it, Gerard? I'm pretty sure that's how you spell it. Nisi Prius.
Yeah, I think so. You're asking the world's worst speller, though. P-R-E-I-S.
I figured I'd let them see two dummies instead of one, you know?
Prius. Okay, Prius.
But, yeah, listen. But you see here, you know, if you go up to essays and lectures and highlight it, okay?
Right.
And you'll get a drop-down box. Then you'll see court access course. You go over there and highlight that. But right away, you should download the court access course. But when you highlight that one, you'll see also drop-down boxes, and it says court case examples, okay? Uh-huh. And when you get to that, there's two examples. One's called an arrest of judgment, and the other one is an action boilerplate. And what you could do is you can use the arrest of judgment, and you can file the papers in on that. The problem is they're going to try to give you a hard time because you're not the person they want him to have a lawyer. This is a major problem. So you do the arrest of judgment, and then you immediately move it into the federal court. Now, moving into the federal court is just one paper that you have to put on top of that. And then when you get into the federal court, then you write the action. You use the boilerplate action on top of that, and you refer to the rest of the paperwork. You refer to that as exhibits, you know, exhibits of facts. And now when you do the boilerplate, you have to go in for constitutional violations. In order to be heard in federal court, it has to be something that is affected by your unalienable rights. And since he's been incarcerated against his will, he's been incarcerated for no crime. He's been incarcerated for no subject matter jurisdiction. He's been incarcerated. They didn't have any personam jurisdiction. He's been incarcerated, and they didn't have the authority as a Nisi Prius court to incarcerate or fine. And so at this point, you also, when you move it to the next court, you're going to have to sue the judge, your lawyer, and the prosecutor. Now, they work together. They got the whole case in trouble by conspiring to hijack him into a foreign court. The court he was actually in, he was in our building that we own, where we expect to get justice and a court of law, and he goes in there and he's hijacked to another place. And that place they hijacked him to it wasn't a court of equity, but they hide it under the court of equity, but it was a chancery court. Chancery court has been abolished in the United States in 1789 when the Constitution became the law of the land, because the law of the land did not permit for chancery courts or chancellors. So now, this is a lot to digest. But you can go back and listen to this tape later, and you can take notes of what we spoke about. Then you can make questions, and then you can bring more questions next week, and so on and so forth. But you got a lot of homework to do to start working on this. And
because I've done a lot of work all through these years, and you know what, John? At this point, I don't have anything else to lose, because you know what? We've almost lost everything. If we be honest.
Yes, I know. I know.
So, and I want to get that gentleman's, if he'll give me his name and number, and maybe I could share mine too, because I might, you know, maybe reach out to him also instead of just always reaching out to you too, John and Bert, and you, because I know you do a lot also.
Well, again, you know what you want to do? You can give Gerard your number, and I don't know, Gerard, you want to give her your number? But the thing is that he is quite busy too, and sometimes I can't get him. And I'm very difficult to get now, but I am available, just so you know, I am available on, Monday nights is the 3-hour program, so I'm not really available other than for NLA business on that night. Tuesday night, I'm usually available after 8:30. Wednesday, I'm not available I am available Wednesday. Thursday, I'm not available except for on this call, but you can come here and talk about this. And Friday, I'm available. So I am available 3 nights a week after 8:30. Sometimes you won't get me because sometimes I may play hooky, you know. But other than that, I usually am here anyway. And but remember, if you do the homework that I just gave for you to do, you look at those things and you start playing with them and you start writing down questions and you look at the case and you get all the paperwork. I don't know if you got the paperwork for what this clown did on your case. I'm sure it's nothing anyway.
We have developed
hocus pocus. I'll bet you didn't even write any papers. Maybe just one.
Yeah.
Was he given to them free? Or did he hire him?
No, he had a court-appointed lawyer.
Oh yeah, they really love you.
Yeah, he had a court.
Listen, give her my email. Let her get a hold of me on email, Gerard53@live.com.
Gerard53@live,
L-I-V-E, .com.
All right. Thank you, Gerard. And then you can also
and
get
what's your name? I'll look for what's your name and what email.
Right. And I'm going to give you my email. I'm Tammy Hollins, but it is spelled T-A-M-I-E Hollins. HOLLINS 1@yahoo.com.
All right.
Tammy Hollins 1@yahoo.com.
Okay, very good. So just email me and then I'll get back to you. Thanks.
Okay. And then my one last question, John, and this is about me. I got a ticket for inspection sticker. I'm sorry. My inspection sticker had expired. And I got a ticket for it. Now, do I have to go to court and answer them, or is there something I can do when I add the ticket in, or even once I turn the ticket and plead not guilty? Because just like I said previously, the common law is new, and we've made
okay. What you want to do, because all traffic cases are the same, it doesn't matter. You go again up to the same page. Where we have court case examples. In the second group of papers, you'll see something called traffic. Click on traffic and kind of follow that. Let me take a look to see if everything is there. You may have to add the other parts to it also because there's a file on demand you have to use, and there is a memorandum court of law and a memorandum law of the case. So you have to do those memorandums, and you don't have to change anything on the memorandums except for make sure that you put your information and you clean it up. But, yeah, you'll do the two memorandums, you'll do the file on demand, and you'll do the traffic case. Now, the traffic case is real simple. You'll read it, and you'll say, this wasn't me. This is what happened in my case. Just change the things. You take the ticket, you write it, you put a line diagonally across it, and you put on it return for cause. You put it as the top page above the first page. The first page is the traffic ticket. You want to make a copy of that, by the way. But put the traffic ticket first page. Second page is a file on demand. The third page which is a number of pages, which is your traffic violation paper that you're going to write. They don't have jurisdiction. And then the next is there'll be two memorandums, and you send it in, and you wait. Sometimes they just go away. Sometimes they just don't want to let you go. Sometimes they'll resist you. But when they get to the point when they actually fine you and you have to pay or lose your license or your registration, your plates or something, then at that point you just go pay the ticket. It's not worth going into the court to fight a traffic ticket.
Okay.
You fight it that way. Now you go pay the ticket. Now what you want to do, if you're not happy with that, you can go sue them for $25,000 minimum. You can sue the person who thinks he's a judge because they're not a judge. You can sue the person who thinks he's a prosecutor. If there was one, you can sue the cop. You sue them all. And $25,000 apiece, that's $75,000. And once you go to sue them, you sue them in their court. Then you do the same thing. You file a paper moving it over into the federal court. And then you do your case that you know concerning your traffic ticket. Ultimately, it's not going to be about a traffic ticket. It's about they violated your unalienable rights. They came out and extorted you for money, and you were stopped illegally, and you were asked for your papers. What are we, in Nazi Germany? Of course, you don't want to say that, but that's your case. And then you're going to sue, and you're going to sue them for $75,000 if you got three people involved. And again, you can come back to this. This is recorded, and you can come back to tonight's program. And, you know, I'm talking a little fast, but you can slow it down and figure it out and go through all these papers. And once you puzzle through all this stuff for the week, you'll have questions next week, and we'll talk some more.
Okay, John and everybody else, we appreciate the work that you have done, that you're doing, and even the work that you're allowing us to be able to do from your knowledge that's being shared. And so this is just, whoop, it just makes my skin crawl. It's powerful, It's
nice. In a good way, I hope.
Yeah, it's nice that the community can become empowered. People can become empowered. This is powerful.
Right.
So thank you. Have a good night. I'm going to stay on and listen to some other things, though, but thank you.
Okay.
John,
all right. Anybody else out there? And,
yes.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, I filed a case in January of this year, and the judge in the
Hold on.
United
I'm going to mute everybody. You're going to have to unmute yourself now. There was too much noise. Go ahead. Star 6.
Yes.
Unmute.
Okay. In January of this year, I filed a case in the District Court of the United States, and I even put in my jurisdiction the Longsworth case, where it says in the District Court is the Article III court, and so I wanted it in the court of record, and I think that's why it's hung in the courthouse for so long, because, you know, I didn't know if they knew what to do with it, because I was telling them which court I wanted it in.
No, they're waiting to find out if you know what to do.
Well,
but go ahead.
Well, what they did was last week I got the notice that he dismissed the case, and he didn't get on any merits or anything.
What's his name?
But, you know, I've been What's his name? Marbley.
Okay, no. This was a case that was against you, or this was a case that
no,
you filed?
I was the plaintiff. I was the plaintiff.
Oh.
I filed it, and
yes. Well, what
I filed
he was
it
doing.
In,
what he was doing, he saw your paperwork, and he said to himself, because you brought up court of record, you brought up a few things. This was federal court, right? Yeah, you brought up a few things. Remember, they're chess players. And they looked at it, and they says, well, okay, let's see what this person knows. We'll put them on ignore for how long you were on ignore?
Well, it's January, and now it's last week.
He was waiting for you. He was waiting for you. And you see, you got to be aggressive in your case. I want a speedy trial. I want it done yesterday.
Okay.
I'm not
well,
waiting around. Nothing. So what happened?
So what
was
should I do now?
That's
so
what happened? Well, let's put it this way: you had an affidavit, sworn affidavit.
Well, I did have a sworn affidavit, and it was unrebutted, and it's filed in as an evidence in this. It wasn't in this court case. It was in the state. It was in the common pleas court in the county. See,
okay, but then you brought it in. You brought it into the federal court.
Yeah, it's in the it's in
so
the
it's
evidence.
In part of the case. It's the evidence. Okay, now, so you did an affidavit. What was it, a contract?
No, this is state income tax where they, you know, I didn't file. The IRS sends them a number to the state of Ohio, and so then Ohio creates
the
liability.
Okay, I think in New York State, for instance, they're cowards, and they better be cowards. They do not normally come out after you, and if they try to, they don't push too hard because they know they're breaking the law. And then they're walking on very, very shaky grounds. The IRS, they rule the world, so they don't care. And they'll take you to the laundromat and press you and clean you and do everything. I don't know how it is in Ohio. I don't know if they're bold with this stuff.
They're
now, first
pretty
of all,
bold.
Okay, well, first of all, you filed a case against them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You had an affidavit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You moved it into the federal court, and now the federal court threw it out for what purpose?
Well, no, what's that, 12B6, no subject matter jurisdiction, whatever, you know.
Well,
what
did you bring it into court for? Did you sue them for what did you sue them?
I put it fair. It was a Fair Debt Collection Practices Act because it's an attorney who is a debt collector for the state of Ohio was coming after me. So I said, you know, validate this debt, and he didn't. Well, he sent me a precipice. Well, a precipice is a piece of junk.
Did he send you back to the state court?
to the state court? No.
Yeah, no.
He started garnishing my wages.
Who started garnishing?
The debt collector went to the Common Pleas Court in Coshocton.
I got you. Okay, they did a third-party thing on you, number one.
Right.
Okay? They don't have a contract with you. You don't have agreement. You don't know who they are.
No one
can sell anything without your approval if you were in a contract. First of all, you weren't in a contract with the state, okay?
Mm-mm.
And if the state claims I was in the contract, well, then let them come and prove it, okay? So they sold it to a third-party debt collector. They came out after you. And they're mm-hmm. chasing it down. All of that is illegal. Ultimately, what they're doing is coming out after you in REM and under fiduciary authority. And now, I'm going to talk a little fast, but remember, there's a rewind here. You can come back
right.
and get the tape. Okay? Now, what you have to do is you have to go back into the court, and you have to file an arrest of judgment for fraud on a court and fraud on a case. Okay? That's
mm-hmm.
what you're coming in at. You have to come in there with your affidavit. I would kind of do it fresh, to be honest with you. You got to refresh everything, come in with an affidavit, and then you let it be known that there is no what's called a 4490 or a Form 56, okay? Now, these two forms, in order for them to come out after you in a process called REM, which is what they're using, they're coming out in REM, R-E-M, which
mm-hmm.
is the Piracy Act, okay? They're coming out as if you're a pirate and they're going to take your ship away and they don't have to serve any papers on you because you're a pirate. But you're not a pirate, you're not at sea, and it's not a ship, okay? So
mm-hmm.
all of that doesn't work to begin with. But in order for them to legally do it, they have to file down at the federal building. They have to file two forms. One form gives them fiduciary authority. The other form gives them, it's a proof of claim. They're Form 56 and 4490. If you put that on to the Google, you'll find them pretty quickly. And you can make copies of that, and you can walk in the court, shake in the courts. I didn't see any Form 56 or 4490. They had no authority to do this. This whole thing was a fraud, okay? And it is a fraud, because in order for them to have these authorities over you, they have to do an affidavit. And these guys, lawyers, never do affidavits, and they never have their clients do an affidavit. That's why you can win every case. Every single case you can win, slam dunk, because they got lawyers, and they don't do the things that's required in order to make a case. In order to make a case...
He signed an affidavit for garnishment against me, calling me a judgment debtor.
I don't know that it was an affidavit. He may have signed a sworn piece of paper. Was it, did he swear it in front of a...
Notary, yes.
Okay, and was it an affirmation, and did he speak as a third party?
He spoke as a third party.
Okay, there you go. What does a third party know about anything? It's all hearsay.
I know, well, that's true. He's
got to have fiduciary authority.
Okay.
That's got to be filed with the federal courts. I've never seen one ever filed with the federal courts because the feds never will do that, ever. They're too bright to know they're not going to do that, okay, at least not yet. Further into slavery they might, but right now they're not going to do it yet. The state, I can't believe that they're that dumb either. They probably don't even know they have to do it. As a matter of fact, I'm aware of other town cases where they take properties away from people under REM and they never file those forms. They don't even know what I'm talking about. But that's good,
mm-hmm.
you see, because
okay.
in the courts, you get into the federal courts, they know. You see, once they've done the fraud on a court, now it becomes a federal offense because they violated your unalienable rights by taking you into a foreign court, and the judge conspired with the lawyer to take your property without an affidavit, without a rebuttal to your affidavit, and that was they violated your due process, and now it's a federal offense. Now you're taken right back into the federal court. So I'd refile in that court. Okay, going back for that, and the day after you file it, you file another paper moving it into the federal court, and you then fill out an action, which you go on the page where I told the other lady at, and you take that paper that's an action, you fill out that information according to your own case, okay, you might pull a few things out, and you might have some other things you want to add in, but basically that's the case, it's the framework, and so when you file that, you're suing them. You're suing the judge. You're suing the lawyer, okay, because they conspired for violating unalienable rights. and you pull in, I think it's Article 3, Section 4, which and let's see, I think it's 2, that talks about law and equity, and I think it's 4 where it talks about the authority in the federal courts, I think. And, of course, there's, let me think about 6. I don't think 6. But anyway, next week when you, or another time when we talk some more, I'll go through that with you. But
so you don't think I should like send like a writ of error to the judge because last week he threw out my, you know, that
you have not really got a federal case yet. You do have a federal case, you just didn't write it right. You see, you have to write the fact that they conspired against you to violate your due process. That's a constitutional violation.
So the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act that I went to federal court with against the third-party debt collector.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with it. The third party, all that stuff. Look, at you have to. Yeah, first of all, you might have been able to slide in there a little bit, but he waited since January. Why did he wait? He's seen what you're doing. You didn't do nothing. He threw it out because you don't know what you're doing. That's what is in his mind, okay? And he's going to turn around and say, well, the case was there. She didn't respond. Threw it out, you know? And no one's going to bother the judge, so he's going to do what he pleases. Now, once you get into court the other direction, you better be boning up on common law. You better be boning up on a constitution. Look at you know, get a pocket constitution, read through it. Listen to the. I'll tell you what. Listen to the Federalist tapes and the Anti-Federalist tapes. But more than that, right now you want to listen to Thornton. If you hadn't, go through him 2 or 3 times, which sounds like you've done some. Get the process of paper writing together. By getting our free course on that, the book, and read some of our cases because it gives you ideas on how to write. You know, you learn how to write by reading other cases. I learned how to write by reading the U.S. Supreme Court cases, but I also did other reading. I read history and I read I looked into the history of the jury. We looked into the American history. Looked at the founding fathers, founding quotes. But a lot of Supreme Court rulings, and you'll see there's a lot. We have a lot of that stuff in that course when you download all that stuff. I need to update one day that because I got a lot more stuff to put up there. But anyway,
okay.
That's what you got to do. You got to make a federal case out of it.
John?
Yes, Rick.
Thank you.
We have a question from the chat room.
Sure.
And. I also had a question last night that was raised by one of the guests, Ralph Epperson, I believe it was, who was on Dylan's show. Dylan's the 15-year-old paraplegic who's wide awake and waking people doing his own shows, who's on our network twice a week now, an incredible young man. His guest, brilliant guy who knows a lot, not as much maybe as you, but a little about everything. And he was speaking of a gentleman who's very knowledgeable in a lot of this stuff. And the question that people wanted asked tonight on your show is 2 things. Are you familiar with the Tompkins Erie Railroad versus Tompkins 1938 decision that some people believe made our Constitution null and void?
Yes, that's I'm familiar with that.
Erie Railroad versus Tompkins in 1938. And the other question, I'll just ask it now so I can just let you answer both of them. Mark the Spark says, hello, John. If we take back our justice via the common law grand juries, will this apply retroactively to cases which have already been wrongfully prosecuted? Meaning people that are in prison, I imagine, because, they didn't know what to do. They had a bad lawyer or representative themselves and ended up, getting handed a raw sentence maybe for pot possession or dealing weed or something stupid that where nobody...
Right, I can answer that one pretty quick. We're going to have our hands full dealing with people, particularly that are in county prisons. We're going to pretty much have to empty out those prisons, and that's going to take time in each county because each group has got to get in there and start looking at this. So, you know, again, first order of business is taking care of the house. You know, we have to secure the nation. We do that by securing our own counties and enlightening our sheriff, requiring him to learn and bone up on common law. Once you're in the courthouse, he'll look at you with authority and he'll listen to everything that falls out of your mouth. So you got to be careful to make sure that we know what we're talking about. Or you know, you can always say, hey, I'm new at this too. I'm trying to figure it out. Let me go find out the answer to that one. You know, there's nothing wrong with doing that. So... But the bottom line is that first order of business is securing our house. So we have to take care of Republic and securing our resources and bringing everything back to common law. That might take 30 to 60 days to do. After that, I think we have emergency cases, people that lost their children. I mean, all kinds of things we have to deal with quickly and swiftly. And then, of course, we have to look at all these people, these poor people that are in prisons that are there for crimes that don't exist. You know, if there's no injured party, there is no crime. And I can tell you right away that every one of those cases, there's no sworn affidavit on any one of them. None of them. You may get a police officer. First of all, a police officer can't be a witness in most cases anyway. And he can tell a story. But he's really not a witness. Generally, he's been called to the scene, although, you know, there are other extenuating circumstances here. But the bottom line is this. He signs a paper, I forget what they call it, could be an arrest paper or whatever they call it, and at the bottom it says, I swear, and he signs it. Well, that's not a sworn statement, okay? A sworn statement requires a notary bearing witness to your signature and that you swore that paper. And until they do that, there is no... the subject matter jurisdiction from the court. Also, the court that they were arrested in was Nisi Priya's court. Again, just like I told the other woman, those courts cannot incarcerate or fine, even though they're doing it. But they're doing it. They think they're getting away with it because they're getting your consent. Okay. Now that brings us right into that 1938 case and all the or was that 1838? I think it was early on, wasn't it? What was the year on that?
I'm not sure if it was 1838 or 1938.
Yeah, I think it was 1838. It was very young on. Erie,
Annie's looking at it right now online. She did a search, and it says Erie Railroad Company B versus Tompkins, T-O-M-P-K-I-N-S.
Yeah, don't read all the numbers, but if you look through, you'll probably see a year in there somewhere.
Right, it says 1938.
Okay, there's some earlier cases, too, that claim to have taken away our unalienable rights. But here's the problem with that, okay? Our nation was started off by a group of men who studied very carefully, of course, the common law. They were all lawyers, but not bar lawyers. Remember that. I look to myself as being a lawyer, but I'm not a bar lawyer. I have a lot to learn, nevertheless. But we read in the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that we are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the people. So, we have unalienable rights. If you look up unalienable, it means something that cannot be transferred, sold, or given away. So if we have unalienable rights, where did we get those unalienable rights? They were a gift from the Creator. Can we exercise those unalienable rights? Well, if God blesses us, we can. If He doesn't bless us, we won't be able to. Because look at most countries, you can't exercise your unalienable. Everybody has unalienable rights. Every human being born on this planet. But in most places, you can't exercise them because God hasn't blessed those nations in a way that permitted that to happen. But here in the United States, He did bless this nation, and we did have that freedom. Now, people have taken it away from us, and the reason why they've taken it away from us is because we fell asleep. We got lost in our own concerns. We got filled with self-concern and, you know, playing games, and, you know, we just haven't been paying attention. And, of course, there's the conspiracy to dumb us down, so we're dumbed down. So now, now we're waking up. Okay, can we retrieve it? Of course, that's what our plan is, to try to retrieve it. But now let's go back. What did they do? They defrauded us. The whole process is a defraud. But who is it that is king of the world, that owns all things, that they think they can make some declaration? What group of people thinks that they can incarcerate the entire world? Of course, none of them can. Well, of course, they think they can do that. Yes. So, but anyway, we go back into the founding document here. Okay, let's go into the, that was the first founding document. That was the beginning. Let's go into the second one. Okay, the second one is we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, number one, establish justice, number two, ensure domestic tranquility, number three, provide for the common defense, that was number four, promote the general welfare, that was number five, and secure the blessings of liberty. That was number six. Our founding fathers understood liberty only comes with the blessing. And the government, the purpose of the government is to secure that blessing, okay, to ourselves and our posterity, that goes all the way down the line forever, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. We are kings in our own right, every one of us kings without subjects. Our subjects is government officials, although you would think it's the other way around, but they're our subjects. Other than that, we don't have subjects. And, you know, your home is your castle, you're king of that castle, okay? But the bottom line is we, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. So,
okay, Mark just wanted to follow up. He said, so I assume that this would apply also to people who have signed plea bargains.
Absolutely.
And who may not have been in prison, but may still have serious charges,
Look, a fraud is a fraud. They
right.
fraudulently, they suckered you, they did all kinds of things, they kept you ignorant. The day you realize, whoa, wait a second here, now you can come back and take it all back. Well,
right, so Mark is basically saying in the next line, so the government under common law grand juries, if somebody did pursue this and we were successful in reverting back to common law courts, then the government would be liable for fees, fines, restrictions, lawyers' charges,
Bear in mind.
You know what? I just want to add to his question there, and then I'll shut up and I'll let you go on with it. I would think that your answer would be yes, if they caused you harm and you had to pay fees and you spent time in jail and you had to pay bail and lawyers, that would all be recoverable and people would have valid cases once this goes through. And I would like to just add to that, and here's what I'd like to add to that. Because of the criminal conspiracy of the prison industrial complex in bed with the New World Order, Freemason, Illuminati, if you're dumb enough to consent and we can trick you out of your rights and get you to be afraid and go along and extort you and pay all this stuff, if they actually had to pay damages and pay people that they've wronged, would that not bankrupt this country? I think the lawsuits would be bigger than the federal debt, fake debt,
mm-hmm.
the fake debt that isn't even real. In other words, if the bankster Illuminati guys say we owe them trillions of dollars because of the deficit and because they're loaning us money for wars
Remember, they're loaning
all
us debt.
Social programs, right? If the United States is in debt falsely with fake debt to these satanic Luciferian banksters that have defrauded everybody and everything, I would think if every person who ever went to court, paid a fine, or spent time in jail were to go back and demand justice and try to seek retribution because you made me pay, you did this, you held me wrongfully, you kidnapped me, you beat me up, that if everybody were to file lawsuits, everybody who's ever been a victim of the justice system, the amount would be bigger than the amount of money that these Luciferian banksters claim we owe them.
there'd be no way to pay off all the damages. Am I correct?
That's right. You know, just look at all the people they've killed, the families they destroyed. They could never pay that back. But let's look at that a little bit in a minute. Let's go take a step back here. Let's look at the idea of fraud. Okay, that was a wrongdoing. It was fraud. If it's fraud, it's a wrongdoing. If it's a wrongdoing, it has no authority. The games they play with acts, trying to create some kind of a law somewhere or some kind of a court decision, and they try to hijack freedom. They try to hijack a country. Look at that's fraud. It's all done in secret. It's done in darkness, and it's fraud. No matter how you get it, a fraud is a fraud is a fraud is a fraud. Now, the bottom line is you have to ask, where does the authority come from? Well, we know our authority comes from God. The authority of the people come from God. We have unalienable rights. We have that's where our authority comes from. Now, we have to answer to God. Now, the government's authority comes from the people, okay? So we give them the authority to do this or to do that, and we've defined it in a constitution. And we then gave them a Bill of Prohibitions, which is also known as the Bill of Rights. This is what you can't do. Don't mess around with this stuff. And it was brilliantly written, because in those ten amendments, I mean, they really just boxed the whole place up. But, of course, they've dumbed us down, and we don't know about them. People never read it, and they don't know what's really in there. But in any event, it's all a fraud. Now you say to yourself, okay, who are these people? So it's a group of people who decided to take control of our legislative system and many other parts of our government, and they started to implement these things and to change our laws and to do things to destroy everything we've got. Now where do they get the authority to do that? They don't have that authority. It doesn't come from nobody. They claim it that they have the authority of themselves, and they just
it's
do it.
A trick.
So you see, the
they
whole thing is irrelevant.
By consent.
Right.
They
the whole thing.
You,
no,
right.
But even that. Look at even the consent is a fraud because they've tricked you. Like you said, they defrauded you. Okay. But when the people come to understand this, and they in one accord take this system, which is fiction, and call it from what it is, and places reality on top of that fiction, it's nothing. If everybody knew what we're talking about, if everybody knew, then everybody would go to these stupid courts and say no. They'd be so overwhelmed, and no one would hire a lawyer. They'd go out of business because of that. And we would shut the whole system down. It would be a Gandhi thing, you know? And that'll be that.
That's what we're working for.
Right,
so
right.
So basically, the answer to Mark's question is that people will... I guess what you were trying to say is the immediate cases that are pending or people incarcerated or people trying to get their children back would have to be dealt first. And anybody
well, we have
who
to get
did,
to that, yes.
Right. And anybody who did have a case that they did want to file a lawsuit because the state of Florida or Massachusetts wrongfully... what would the word be? Extorted them, kidnapped them, assaulted them, and extorted them for bail and to pay a fine for a nonviolent crime that was not really a crime, according to common law. So let's say every little thing that I've ever got in trouble for that I didn't harm anybody. If common law succeeds, the grand juries, and we succeed, and they don't do a false flag, and we're not turned into a third world country with UN troops on the ground and most of us dying from starvation and stuff. If we are successful, I could, in time, do my research, go into a court, and file lawsuits for being kidnapped, beaten up,
Right, but you're probably not going to get nothing, and that's because you
right,
hit the nail on the head before. There's not enough money to pay all of the
right.
All of
there's
the,
too many cases, right? That's,
exactly,
that's,
but let's right. go beyond that. Let's go beyond that. Okay, what you are going to get is you're going to get freedom. You're going to get liberty. You're going to get liberated. You're going to get this country will come back to a real strong, powerful country monetarily again because we'll go back to gold and silver. That in
well,
itself would make us all reasonably wealthy in a sense. But on
well,
top
let,
of
let
that,
me, let
on
me
top
ask
of
this
that,
question: after we were to reinstate the common law, and which you know eventually we would. This Federal Reserve money system is going to collapse or it would be expunged. Yeah, Mark said all wrongful charges would be expunged, question mark, yes. But let's hypothetically let's hypothetically, is there a possibility that if we had a hemp industry across the nation, because no longer is that considered illegal, and thousands of companies and manufacturers and hemp growers, we built up a new money system, a new Declaration of Independence, going back to do no harm, common law, God's law, ethics. Would there be any recourse maybe out of states' monies to compensate?
Well, let's look. That's what I was going to try to answer. Let's try to answer this, okay? Look, there is a certain amount of restitution you're going to get, but not huge, okay? There is something else that's involved here, and I can't talk about it. And there may be something with what you're talking about. I just can't talk about it. But in any event, the bottom line is we're going to get liberty back. We're going to get a nation back. You're going to go, of course, and sue these people, but there's so many people going to sue them, there's just not going to be enough money to go around, at least not from there. There may be some coming around there, but it's going to have to be split with so many people. I mean, my goodness, there's a judge that retired or is in retiring, and he was boasting that in the course of his career, he has given out over 1 million years in sentences, in jail sentences. Well, just think of all the people he damaged, because I'll bet you, I'll bet you 100%, well, we know 100% of the people that he put in jail, he didn't have the authority to do in the first place, but I'll bet you 99% of those people, there was no victim, okay? And he gave out all, how can he possibly restore? He doesn't have enough cars, enough property, or anything to do that. And so it is a major problem. It's not the it's not the people's job to to restore people. You can't go to the burden of the taxpayers and make them pay anything. But there are other things which we cannot and we're not going to talk about that can come to play, and later in the future we will talk about them, things that might be of assistance to this. But in any event, what I'm saying right now is kind of the best you can get. But that's good enough to get out of jail. Now, the other thing is all these people that never committed a crime, then they have no record at all, obviously. But the people who have committed a crime, you know, now we may have to retry all these cases. We'll try to make a lot of deals to work these things out. We'll review the cases and try to make deals and without having to go through court cases. But if we have to, we have to. And we're going
to
have to burden ourselves
up,
with it. Yep.
To wrap up the questions that Mark was asking, I just thought of something. When we take, if we are successful in seeking God's face and taking back the judicial system in our country, those who wrongfully conspired against humanity, who hold 90 to 95% of the wealth, maybe, likely, possibly, the money that wasn't spent on their underground cities and their lavish lifestyles.
Remember. Hold it, Rick. This is a place we don't want to go, okay? But what you're saying has some validity, and there's another thing also. But remember, everything that they spent was debt. They never spent an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver. Go reach in your pocket and pull out what money you have, and whatever it is, you can count it, and that's how many dollars in debt you have. Because you see, at the end, when everything crashes, all that becomes worthless, and the person with $1 million lost a lot more with the person with $20, you see?
Right.
So you're carrying debt. The whole thing is debt.
Okay.
It has nothing
to
do with money.
To say,
You're going to get some satisfaction there, but that's a worldwide satisfaction. But there's other things that we can't talk about also.
The question that I was asking is, of the guilty people and conspirators that have amassed wealth, when we take it back and confiscate the wealth that was ill-gotten, was gained illegally, their gold that is hidden in places, possibly there will be wrongful lawsuits that could be paid off from the money, I mean, from the gold and their assets. If we, you know,
well,
is that a possibility?
Look it. That kind of thing becomes a national thing, and it becomes an international thing. And the debt of the nations are involved in that, and that's going to get lost into that part of the process. And that'll stabilize the world, okay, because there's plenty there to stabilize the world. After all, you know, they've been collecting this stuff half of forever. They've got everything that's in Fort Knox. So we got to leave that alone, because that's got to stabilize the world. But there are other things that we can't talk about. And, you know, look, and I'll talk to you personally about it, and you'll understand. I just can't talk about it. We need to focus in on what we're doing. So there potentially is something else.
Can I ask a question about the grand jury?
Sure.
Thank you. What do you do if our de facto grand juries have actually declined to take on a case? What would be a good way for us to intervene with that, to try to get the common law grand jury or...
Well, they declined because they're told to decline by the prosecutor.
I know.
The prosecutor in New York State controls them, so they won't take on a case because they're going to be obedient to mommy and daddy government. So can we take on those cases? Well, not right now. We're going to dismiss the Nisi Prius courts, and we're going to dismiss the puppet juries. And we'll get some of the same people onto the jury, okay, because we'll pull them out of a pool, all right? But they'll be trained differently, okay? They'll be freed. You see, we get 8 hours to talk to these people. The first day is jury orientation, and we get 8 hours, and we'll show them, we'll show them the videos for maybe a half hour, 20 minutes or whatever. We'll discuss those videos. We'll teach them the principles and the two major maxims, and then they'll take their bow. And we'll make sure they understand what the meaning. They understand the meaning of the principles. You have to have a sense of honor. You have to have a sense of justice, and you have to have a sense of mercy. And every decision you make, you have to look to make sure it's an honorable decision, to make sure that it is you've considered mercy. Sometimes mercy isn't even considered, okay? But you got to consider, can mercy be considered? Nah, can't. Or how much if you do, okay? And you got to be just, okay? So that's the principles that they must operate on. And it doesn't take much for the people that are operating on those principles to see if someone in the group is not operating. Because you say, wait a second here, you didn't consider. See, you could throw that person out of the group. Okay, but you got to PK on the principles. The other thing is the maxims. There are two major maxims, okay? In order for there to be the crime, there must be an injured party, okay? And the injured party cannot be the state, right? So it doesn't even go to court. Now, the last one, or the other one, is, you know, for every injury, there must be a remedy. So you got to repair the injured party. So, but we can do those things, and we will not...
I understand all that, and my question is actually more directly, could we use this opportunity?
I want to dovetail into her before she...
Okay, finish my actual question is there was a very serious injustice done, and there was no prosecution, and somebody was murdered, and then the grand jury declined to investigate, and this is very recent in the last couple of months.
Yeah, we'll pick that up.
Okay. Well, I would like to do that. All right.
Only one word power.
I have a dovetail to this. If this is a case that she thinks that she can win in this system, that it's that serious, that and it's that documented, there is no double jeopardy with a grand jury. You can go to any other grand jury any amount of times you want. So if you think that it's something that will come out with the right people, then go to another grand jury. They can't stop you.
Another county or something, you mean?
Another county. That's right. They have to do it. It's a capital case. It has, you know what I mean? And there's double jeopardy with grand juries. In other words, it was never taken up. It could be taken up anytime, anywhere, in the future, and that goes for even their puppet grand juries. So if you think it's a case that has merit, that maybe even some prosecutor would sink his teeth into it, then, you know, if you want to pursue that, you can do that.
Okay. Thanks, Gerard.
Hi. My name is Tim. I have a question.
How you doing? What state are you from?
I'm from Illinois.
Okay. Go ahead.
I've been listening to you guys for several months, and I had a couple questions, and if I have too many, I'll be happy to call you at some other time, but I'd like a clarification on a couple things. My understanding is that NLA's attempts to reconstitute federal common law grand juries as specified in Article 7 of the Bill of Rights, as opposed to state common law grand juries in the states of the Union, right? Correct?
Incorrect. No, we're establishing grand juries in every county, okay? And every county has a courthouse. And so, therefore, we need an administration of four individuals minimum in that county in order to call for grand juries. Now, federal districts fall in numerous counties. Let's say there's five counties. There's a federal district that covers five counties. Well, you have five administrations there, and we might take turns, acting on behalf as the administrators for calling the juries in for the federal cases. So we can turn them around. If one's too busy, they can push it off to another. You know, you'll have certain counties that have a lot less workload than other counties, and they'll probably take more of the federal load than others. Or you can move them around and ask them for help, and they can come in and help in another county. You know, we all work together. It's a state. The boundaries is really the state. The federal is within those counties.
Let me see if I can verify that. It's federal common law grand juries, but then the regions or whatnot might be separated according to the districts and the states and the counties within them, but all that activity is federal grand jury.
No, state. There's also state county grand jury, state grand juries, which there's a state court in every county.
We're doing it all is the short answer. We're doing
it. There's a wrongdoing to allow a puppet grand jury or corporate grand jury to go anywhere. Yeah.
So my understanding, and may be incorrect, and I've read some material from books that are 75 years old or so, is, you know, of course, there are state grand juries, state common law grand juries, I should say, and there are federal common law grand juries.
No, you're missing
correct?
It. No. Look, it may be a federal court that has the jurisdiction. That judge is still just a traffic cop in the court. You know, he's a magistrate. He's not a judge. Okay, and he plays traffic cop, stop, go, okay, come on, stop there, your turn. You know, he keeps it going that way. Other than that, because it's a federal court, it's irrelevant. It's just taking the federal jurisdiction. It's still the people of that state, and within those counties are the peers of the person that is being brought up. So if the IRS brings a charge against an individual, he's got to be judged by the peers in that county, in those counties. But bear in mind, the IRS has a problem. The IRS is going to have to get past the administrators, because that's a whole new story. We're not going to get into details, but you know what I'm talking about. But the bottom line is that the issues are in that state, and the peers of that person is within that county or the counties, particularly the county. And so if the person, and that may be a way to look at it, if it's a federal case for a person that's living in Dutchess County, then the people of Dutchess County, then that's where the jury needs to be drawn from. Okay, and the district to go into court for the Dutchess County is in the Westchester County they call that. They don't call that the southern tier. Well, they may call it the southern tier. I think it's called the southern district. And then, of course, there's the New York City district. So there's court down there. There's one in Westchester, and there's one in Albany, and one in Rochester. And then they have all these little satellite federal courts also. But those are the four districts, okay? So that's how they would choose it.
So my understanding from reading some of these quite old books on the matter, mm-hmm. are that the history, and they even go back as far as how the grand juries developed through the history of the colonies, that varied significantly by state.
Yeah. But you know, some of those books, well, you got to bear in mind, there's some books out there written by lawyers, and they wrote them early on. And they've always been working to subvert the grand juries or the common law particularly. And so it could be a good book, it could be a bad book. Look, if you want to get real truth, you want to get real history, first of all, common law is common sense. So let's start right there. Second of all, you look at the wrongdoing in the situation. You look at, you go read or listen to Lysander Spooner, okay? And you'll get a good picture there of how things work or how things should work. Even back in his days, he said that it really wasn't working right. Okay, and he's right. He was right.
Yeah, I'm familiar with
that. Was
his
that
work.
Was in 1852, huh?
I'm familiar with his work. So let me ask you the following question then. If, use common sense, and I'll go to the Constitution. Mm-hmm. My understanding is the NLA's position is that the only law that exists lawfully in the states of the Union is common law. Is that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. Well, no, that's not absolutely correct because, you see, there is equity. There is admiralty. You know, it all has its own place and within its own criteria.
Okay,
nobody,
so can you...
You go in, nobody help. Has to go into equity court.
Okay, so help me understand the following. I look at the original records in the courts, let's say in Maryland, while it was a colony, and then after it was a colony, and they continued to have, before and after becoming a state of the Union, chancery courts. So if that's the case, my understanding from your earlier comments are that chancery courts, when the Constitution was formed, were basically chancery law was non-existent in the states.
Totally
of the
abolished.
Union.
No, totally abolished.
Totally
although
abolished.
Chancery courts continued after 1789, but they were running illegally, and they've continued in some states, and even right up to our day, they still call certain courts chancery courts, and actually all of the courts have moved to chancery courts, because remember, chancery courts were created in order to subvert common law. And what you have, when you have a chancellor, he's the extension of the king. And he does the will of the king there in his corporate charter. But when the corporate charter isn't available, he can make it up as he goes. He also has certain authorities to even make things up, especially now. They do whatever they want, okay? And so you're going into kings that could take your head off. That's what's going on. And that's the problem.
So in 1789, what abolished the chancery courts then?
Article 3, paragraph, subsection 2.
Article 3?
Article 3, subsection 2. And that says, let me see, Article 3, 2, let's look at Article 1 first, but it's in Article 2 that it's seen. Section 1.
I'm sorry,
1,
the Constitution or the Bill of Rights? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's the Constitution, Article 3. Constitution or amendments, these are articles. Okay, Article 3, judicial power. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. Now remember, we gave them the power to ordain and establish these other courts, but they have a criteria here. The judges both of the Supreme and the inferior courts shall hold their office during good behavior. So if they're not following the rules and they're trashing the Constitution, they're in bad behavior, you can take them out. And shall be started at stated times, receive for their services compensations which shall not be diminished, and so on. Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. Now, if you go into the Anti-Federalist Papers, we have them on tape, and I listen on tape, and I think it's tape 20. You'll get a guy named Brutus that starts to talk. He's got his first letter there. And there's some other guys before him, too, and there's others after. But particularly this guy, Brutus, he gets into some of this stuff, and he gets into the problems with the equity courts. And we got to make sure, and he talked about the chancery courts and these things. There were some problems with all these courts. So now it goes into the law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, the treaties made, of which shall be made or under their authority to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and councils, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction. Remember, there's law at sea. Jurisdiction to controversies to which the United States shall be a party. Okay, so here is all of the jurisdictions. On the land, there are only two jurisdictions, law and equity. And you don't ever have to go into equity. Now, remember, equity identifies ultimately with a judge, okay? When you have a judge is a judge magistrate, okay? And so when you go into equity court, you're getting a jurist, a judge, one jurist, and he's going to make the decision, and there's an appeal process, okay? And when you go into common law side of the court, now he's a magistrate, he's just a traffic cop. Now, all of this, both of these and all of that article is controlled by Article 6, Paragraph 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made pursuant thereof, which means within the criteria, they have 18 powers. You read about that in Article 1, okay, of legislation, legislative powers. Okay, pursuant thereof, and all treaties made of which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the constitutions or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. So you see, that's the law of the land we're talking about here, which is this Constitution. Every court, every place has to adhere to it. Now, any law that is made that is contrary, or any constitution of any state that is contrary, that part is null and void. It has no authority. And if they try to apply it against you, they therefore violate your unalienable rights, you move it into a federal court, and they're supposed to secure a Republican form of government for us and prevent that from happening. And you can go into that case in order to be heard. So therein is the way, you know, it works. In Article 4, Section 4, it says, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislator or of the executive when the legislator cannot be convened against domestic violence. Okay? So these laws, let me tell you something. When they hammered out this Constitution, they did a heck of a job. The problem is people don't use it. They don't read it. They don't study it. We should be studying this document. Because if you understand this Constitution and you understand the Bill of Rights, you can go kick butt. Now, we have a little pocket handbook for jurists, and it's 48 pages. It's a little handbook that's in your pocket. And you can get also you can get the pocket constitutions. You take those two little booklets and you stick them in your pocket. You walk into any court. You can argue any case with those two books.
So I'm Vince. Forgive me. I'm reading Article 3, Section 2. Judicial power extends to all cases in law and equity. So you've indicated, yes, there are equity courts. So
yes, and equity courts. Remember, in equity courts, you're agreeing to allow a judge act as the sole jurist, and his decision is not final. It can now be appealed up the system. There's an appellate court system, and then, of course, there's the United States Supreme Court. So you can go to two ways up that ladder to appeal it. Now, if there is no corruption going on, okay, if we take control of the corruptions, you're going to have judges in good behavior. And if you're going to have judges in good behavior, they're going to obey the law of the land. And the poor law of the land is Article 6, and that's what's put upon them. Any judge that breaks Article 6 has now violated your unalienable rights. So when that judge operates outside of his authority by not obeying the law of the land, Article 6, he now violated your unalienable rights. And now you can sue him directly. All right? So they'll be forced. But you can only do that if you know it. If you got a lawyer, their lawyers don't even look at it, and they're really here for the bar situation. And so they're committed to the bar, they're committed to the court, and lastly, to the person who's paying their paycheck.
So if I interpret what you just told me, what Article 3, Section 2 allows you to do is you can choose between entering a court of law or a court of equity.
Say this again, I'm sorry.
If I understood what you just said, essentially, you may choose whether, when you're taken to court, whether you want to try and proceed in a court of equity or a court of law.
Well, yeah, you could go into a court of law. Remember, no criminal case can go into you can go to a court of equity. You can do a contract argument there, or you could do it in a court of law. Of course, I don't know why anybody would want to go into a court of equity for that. I wouldn't give that a thought. Well, look at if you have honest people and they're in good behavior. Maybe it'll be fine. You get through some case simple and quick and get out of there. Other than that, you go in a court of law. And so, yeah, that's true.
So is
remember,
that not
both courts?
It,
both courts
isn't a court of equity
are
essentially a court of chancery?
Absolutely
chancery
not.
Court?
No. Chancery court has nothing to do with a court of equity. Okay, really, the court of equity is dealing with the commercial stuff. Okay, corporations particularly would be involved in that. You look at a corporation can't sue an individual. Okay, so you can't do that in a court of law. And if you're going to get corporation to corporation, you got two fictions. You got to get into equity. You could go into equity court to get through it quickly if you have a contract dispute, and if you feel you want to go there, and the other side doesn't disagree, and it, especially if it's a small sum of money, you go there. Okay. Otherwise, you go into the other court of law, and you're going to get a jury. Well, you can ask for a jury. You see, once you don't ask for a jury and you let the judge go, it just turned into equity.
So, forgive me, I got one more comment at least. So you're telling me that all the courts of chancery that existed after the Constitution was established and ordained, even in the several states of the Union, original 13, that was all basically corruption?
All illegal, yes. If you trace back the Court of Equity, you'll understand where it comes from, okay? You read the book Common Law by Brent Winters, okay? That's a pretty darn good book. It's a research book. I mean, when you look at that book, you know, you may see a third of the page is only written on it, maybe a half sometimes, but usually a third of the page, sometimes a quarter of the page. And everything else underneath it is tiny little words, which are all footnotes. The guy has done his work. He's done his homework. He's done research there. Okay, so he proves everything he talks about. And he researched the common law going all the way back almost 2,000 years. And he traced it all the way up where it came from and how it had its beginnings, what the first ideas were in England, and who brought it in. I mean, it just goes on with great history. And he gives it from the vantage point mostly of the king. He doesn't concern too much with the jury, but he does speak about it. Now, you go to Lysander Spooner, he gives the history from the perspective of the jury. Okay, but now going back to the king, you see, Chancery Court started because the king couldn't, you know, the country was growing, more people were getting, everybody was seeking out the king because they wanted to get some business taken care of because he was the judge, and so he created Chancery Courts. Now remember, all of that was all stuff that caused problems because they really should have been dealing with juries. But there's commercial business going on, so he had the authority to work on that stuff, of course. When you get into Lysander Spooner, the king has no authority at all in the courts. His will, his wish is really doesn't apply, okay? It's the people's will and wish that applies, which is the jury. And there's always that battle between the king and the people for the authority in the court. And that's what you'll see when you go through Lysander Spooner, and you'll start to pick up on that battle also in this book, Common Law. And so... But Chancery Courts was the king gets control of the court. He's making the decision. My wish is your command, okay? And he couldn't hear all the cases, so he anointed people. He called them chancellors. And so they have Chancery Courts. They're chancellors. And so he'd have a lot of people working, doing the business. And, of course, they're doing a lot of dirty business because they're making money for the king and themselves. And so it becomes a ripoff on the people, ultimately. Okay, there's no controls on it. And the will and the wish of the king becomes law, and that's what they're applying, which today is really, the corporate charter, which is ultimately statutes. Okay, so they're applying all that. But then they get to make up the law right on the bench. You know, when there's a conflict, he makes the decision, and it's always the wrong decision because it's a decision that's going to make him more money or more power. Always. Because that's what
so
kings do.
That leads to another important basic question. Forgive me for taking up some time. So I believe then your guys' stance is that statutes are all only applied to corporations, artificial persons.
Well, the only authority for government to write statutes is to control bureaucrats, to control elected individuals, appointed individuals, to control commercial movements. There's 18 powers that was given to the legislators, and you can go read about them in Article 1, or 19 powers. I don't remember if it's 18 or 19. But you go through them one by one, and you can see. Now, I've gone through every single one of them, and no place that I see in there that the courts had the ability to write statutes or make law to control the behavior of people. Nowhere, because we, the people, never gave them that authority. nor can we anyway, because, you know, some group of people could have given it to them, but I didn't give it to them. Doesn't apply to me. It has nothing to do with me. I have unalienable rights. I can't be traded, can't be given away, can't be sold. You can't touch it. You see?
Okay.
So that's the way. Statutes have validity. They have power. They have authority. We use statutes. Okay? But the statutes have to be used in its proper place, not against people. You can't make a person a criminal by writing a statute. Tell them they got to get a permit. And if they don't have a permit, you're going to put them in jail. Who are these people? Who do they think they are? You can't write a statute telling me that I can't drink a glass of wine or a glass of beer or smoke a joint or put a needle in my arm in the privacy of my own home. You can't write a law against that. It has nothing to do with you. My bad behavior is my business. That's between me and God. It has nothing to do with you. You know, even God. God has statutes and he has laws. If you read your Bible, the laws must be obeyed. Okay, and ultimately you find them in the Ten Commandments, and they're given to man to apply them, okay? But the statutes, okay, are laws also, but man does not have the authority to punish for them, okay? God says certain things you're not to do, you know? If you look at a woman in lust, you've already committed adultery, okay? Ultimately, that's a statute. You can't be arrested by man's law because you've looked at a woman in lust. That's your behavior problem that you got to work on. Okay, so, but in God's law, okay, that's a statute that he's going to judge you on at some point in time, okay, or at the end of time. That's his business, and he's going to take care of business at the end. He's going to balance all the accounts. But until then, you get to enjoy your bad behavior, and I suggest that you try to work on good behavior. But we all have our battles, we all have our demons, we're all in a wrestle, war, you know, flesh against the spirit. Spirit against the flesh.
So forgive me, I have one more question to ask you, and I'll let somebody else go on. So if the only law that exists is common law, and my understanding is that common law gave limited rights to women when they were in a marriage. And, of course, with today's recognition of the rights of women is quite different.
Well, that's
than what
not
it was
true
several
in common
hundred
law.
Years ago.
That's not
that's
true
not
in common
true.
Law. Oh no, not at all. In God's law, he has given more. He's leaned in different ways in different things, but the ultimate reason for that was spiritualism. It's not meant for man to apply those laws. He was giving us a spiritual picture ultimately, which we can get into deeper detail on this on a Saturday when we do the Bible, but. But in general, okay, the relationship between a man and a woman is really a picture of the relationship between Christ and his church. Because remember, God's church is called the bride, and he is the bridegroom. You read about this in the Old Testament, and clearly you read about this in the New Testament, especially in Revelation, okay? And so all of these laws was really to give us a spiritual picture. But remember, these are the laws that God requires that man cannot punish you for. Only God can punish you for these laws. And don't think that a woman is more restricted than a man, because ultimately under God's laws, it is more of a responsibility for man than a woman. To be honest with you, okay, and the man is commanded to love his wife as Christ has loved his church. So again, you know, there's a different kind of a focus, and it's all spiritual, but it also has some physical moral requirements, which really it's a balance, you know.
John, let me clarify.
Before you go on, may I plug tune in to ShakeAndWakeRadio.com on Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Where John's new online Bible study show that we call The Word with John Darash, he'll be covering Revelation this week, and
for
John
many weeks
was
to
a
come.
Bible. John, right? But he'll be starting with Revelation this week, and the second half of the show, callers will be invited to call in or join the roundtable via Skype and discuss the scriptures and how it might apply in the second half of the show. And I'd also like to say, yeah, John, when a man and a woman come together in a union before God, they become one.
That's right.
Do
that's,
they not?
That's the final consummation of a marriage. And they become
yeah,
one.
So
that's right. Just like Christ, God, and his church.
My, My question and comment is not with regard to their relationship with God or their relationship
right.
with one
Right, I understand
another.
That, but I tried to make the biblical point that because you were going down a road where a woman has less rights or laws, that you know, rights than men. No, that does not apply in anything that the government can do. A woman has as much rights as any man.
That's not my understanding from what I've read about common law, particularly how common law was exercised with men.
You get a lot of distortments. You get a lot of distortments. Look, there are a lot of people done a lot of things in the name of God, and there was evil, okay, and a lot of that stuff. And that gives Christianity particularly a really bad name. And God speaks about this, okay? And, you know, look, most Christians are Christians by name. A lot of people have used Christianity and other religions for power and authority. That's what they've done. And that's evil. So God, you know, the Bible gets a bad name by the acts of men, evil men. You know, I say it this way. If you want to find the devil, go to a church, because that's where the real battle is, and that's where the devil is really working overtime to take control. And most of these churches today, they're really way out there.
So in short, you would say that a lot of the original works by, if I recall correctly, Blackstone and some of the treatise by Justice Cooley and Justice Story, do you find that most of what they have to say to be true and factual, or do you find that much of that is fraudulent? And
well, I don't know enough about all of those. You know, I'm a newbie myself. I've only been doing this for 5 years, and I got a lot to learn, and I have not studied those individuals. Although we do read their commentaries, as you find in Black's Law and a lot of stuff, and I find that Black's Law is. Look, the Black's Law just puts it out the way it is. After the fourth edition, it's become a tool of those who want to destroy liberty. But prior to that, the fourth edition, it has some problems in it, but generally speaking, it's in pretty good shape. But it tells you the truth. It talks about chancery law because it's a fact. It's giving you the report on it, what's going on, how it works, and what the authorities are, and all that stuff. But it also talks about common law, and it talks about equity, and it talks about all kinds of stuff. Because it gives the definitions of words. That's its purpose. It's a dictionary. I've got Black's 2, second edition, and that's a much better edition than 4, but it's got its problems in getting around it because it's a more of a picture thing. You know, the copy I got is a picture and not a PDF. But mm-hmm. Nevertheless, I can still do a word search. It does recognize it, but I think you lose a lot of stuff in that. But anyway, I use 4th generally. But yeah, I can't comment that Blackstone, there's a lot of good stuff that I've seen. I don't know that I've seen much bad, but again, I haven't read his works. I haven't read the books. I haven't really studied him. And so I can't give you that kind of an opinion.
John, this is Vivian.
Yes, Viv.
Hi, I usually don't say anything. I love what you say, practically without any exception. Except mm-hmm. the fact that you just said that if you want to find the devil, go to a church.
Right.
I really have
well,
to.
I really feel very hurt and very upset over that.
Because the devil is everywhere.
Yeah, let me qualify that, okay? Let me qualify that. I'm not saying that all churches are bad, okay? But I'll tell you, most of them are. There are churches that God's children are still in. I haven't found them where I'm at. I've had a lot of problems in churches over the years. But nevertheless, you know, the battle is a war against, you know, spiritual wickedness in high places. And the real high places is the high places of the church. And that's where I found the battles going on. And you'll find churches have succumbed, always succumbed. Look at the 7 churches of Revelation. They've all fallen apart.
Let me say what I think.
But
hold it.
But God uses those churches to bring the gospel. But I'll tell you what, I think we should get into this discussion on a Saturday because people don't come here for that discussion. And I probably shouldn't have said that. Not here. Because I really would like to define that further.
Let's say my 3 words and then I'm gone. You find bad people in a church, but right. you don't find bad things in a church. The church is a bride of God, of Jesus. And let's leave her alone. There are a lot of bad people that can infiltrate the church and do bad things. but everything that the church is teaching is absolutely immaculate.
Okay, let's say, if you, why don't you come in on Saturday's program? We're doing a study in Revelation. Go read Revelation chapter 17 and 18, and if you come on the program, we'll talk a little bit about that and the subject you just brought up. Okay, but it's not appropriate.
I think that what John meant is those that have corrupted and taken over the church in the highest levels.
That's right.
Not the churchgoers. In other words, the biggest churches and denominations amongst Christianity, at the very top levels, they are actually Luciferians introducing false pagan doctrine and Luciferian doctrine, and they're not really guiding their flocks the way they should be. Now, he didn't mean all churches. I'm sure there's some small churches in certain places that are doing the good work and teaching the Bible and warning their flocks. But the really big ones and the ones in government in bed with the government beast system is what he's talking about.
Right.
The ones that John would go to or I would go to, and we would ask the pastor to step out back with us and, can I ask you a few questions, and talk about the end times that we might be in and what the Bible says about the mark of the beast, and are you warning your flocks? And a pastor might say, well, we don't want to scare people. And before the conversation's over, John or I would be asked to leave and never come back, or they'll call the police. Or if any Christian walks out of a church and you ask them to go home and take a look at this stuff about the New World Order and global government, and that we are in trouble and you need to put on this full armor of the Lord and seek the truth, and a Christian says to you, well, I don't believe in conspiracy theories, get away from me, you nutcase, and calls 911 on you, that's not a Christian. They are the deceived. And we are to come out of that deceived, false church that has been taken over by the Council of Churches,
the
CFR.
Let me try to take
it
in a different direction.
We'll take this over Saturday.
This
on
doesn't
Saturday,
belong
we'll
here. So, but bear in mind, look, Gerard goes to a church, and Gerard and I are very close. He talks about his church and things that's going on, so, and I trust his judgment. So apparently he's found a church that's good up in where he lives. Okay? So, again, I didn't mean it that all churches, but I'll tell you what, if you want to find the devil, that's where he's going to be working, and you'll find him in churches, because, look, if you look back in history, churches are constantly being destroyed and shut down. Why? God starts a good thing, he gets forth his word, the enemy gets in, and sometimes he allows it to succumb because he's judging the people, but the people may flee. All of the seven churches, all of the seven churches of Revelation, they were real churches. They were actual locations, but God's given us a picture of all the churches. But all of them have succumbed to infiltration, and Satan had destroyed them. So I'm sorry that I offended you on that, but for further details to really clarify better, we should talk on Saturday if you're interested.
I just have a simple thing to say. Look, to whom much is given, much is expected. If you believe that there's God and there's a devil, where do you think the devil's going to concentrate his activities? You think he's going to go out in the street where they're fornicating and doing all this stuff? Those people are already doing his will. He's going to go into churches and make discord among the people, and that's where he's going to work. He's going to work on the people who are the better people and try to ruin them and take them. And that's why a lot of times you find a lot of stuff going on in the churches, because he's working real hard there. He doesn't have to work hard in today's world to the people that have already basically given their soul to him. So, yeah, you're going to find some strife in the churches, because he's concentrating on them for a reason, because that's where his work is needed, you know what I mean, in order for his kingdom to get bigger.
Read Matthew 24.
Well said, Gerard. Well said, Gerard. Well said.
Read Matthew 24. Just read it like a book. Read Luke 21. Read Mark 13. So Matthew 24, Luke 21, Mark 13. Then go over to Revelation and read Revelation chapter 17 and Revelation chapter 18. And just read them. And then if you want, you come on to the Bible study on Saturday on the radio program. And then we do, you know, put it into this room too, but it's being broadcast from the radio. And
John, would you chat one thing that the church is teaching that is bad?
Mm-hmm. Do I know one thing
the church is teaching that is bad?
I will talk about this on Saturday. I'll tell you a lot, but go read those verses first, read those chapters, and then let's talk about it there because it's just not appropriate here.
John,
people
here
for law.
Can you clarify?
That's why we have Saturday for looking into the Bible. We have Thursday for looking into the law, and we have Monday for dealing with NLA focus and where we're at, what we're doing, questions on how things work there, and that kind of thing. So we have three different programs, and we do get a little bit in between here, but we don't want to spend a lot of time. So
Easter.
Yeah, there's a lot of things, but let's not get into it today.
Christmas, Halloween.
Let's take this.
Hey John.
Yes.
Hey, John, this is Tanner from Oklahoma. Maybe
hey,
to bring things. I'm all right. I'm all right hanging in there.
Good.
You know, I appreciate your calls and all the different ranges that you have, you know, as far as what you were saying earlier, you know, God, it says clearly we just need to love each other and allow for faults and do what we need to do. My number one enemy is selfishness, and it gets played on all the time. So that's up to me. But to get back on track with the law stuff, I had a question. I was listening to some of the Thornton stuff that he had on the website, and he said that if you get a judgment for a monetary amount of some sort, that there's a possibility you could take that to a bank in the current way things are, and they would put that – they would buy that judgment and put it into kind of a Federal Reserve type situation and buy that from you for a certain amount. So say if it was $10 million, you could sell it for $5 to the bank. They could loan against that and make their exponential money in their crooked ways that they do, but they would buy that from you. And I was wondering, for the first thing I was going to ask you was, do you think that that is something that could happen? So if I do the federal court suing on my particular case with the paternity and the VPOs and going to jail and all that stuff.
Right. I understand
I'm
the question.
Yeah.
Look, at you when you sue in court, there is a process that you can go through after the court is done where they have to come in. If you win the court case, okay, then they have to come in and they have to reveal where their assets are. And that could be done under court order. There is a process for that. I've done that already. And then you can go after their assets and get payment that's due because you won a judgment. Now, sometimes you can't find these assets, and there are people who sell services to find people's assets, and some of them are pretty good. But in any event, sometimes you can't find them. And so, yes, there are processes, and I've never done the second part of it. I've heard of it, and I'm sure it's there. I've been told by people who I know this kind of law and what's involved with it, where you can sell your debt. Now, because it's a judgment, it's not a contract, it's a judgment. So I understand there's a commercial market for that, and you're right, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay, yeah, I was just running that by you to see, because I thought, you know, if they want to feel it, then I could take it right over, you know, make the judgment.
Yeah, you can sell that kind of debt.
Okay, and then the other thing was is, okay, I'm trying to catch up and learn how to do the paperwork, and I'm looking at some of the paperwork. If I get into the federal level, like you're saying, take it out of the local family court, which is a joke, and take it to the federal court, and then I do as a plaintiff and sue and file my paperwork and remain in my jurisdiction and show what they have and all that they should take my case.
You're in family court, right?
Right. I'm in family court and criminal court.
One of the things you want to do, which you probably haven't done yet, is write a paper. Have you wrote papers and filed it as a court case in the family court? Because they really get freaked out on that. Okay, they go crazy. They don't know what to do with that. But that's what you got to do. You got to get your stuff on paper. They don't want nothing on paper, but you file it. Matter of fact, they might even try to reject it. And you do it with a file on demand. If they still reject it because they are that ignorant, then what you do is you mail it in with a, you know, you get someone to mail it for you. It's sort of like a service. So you get a certificate, you know, what do they call that, a proof of
certified
service.
Man.
Well, you do. You get proof of service. Someone else has to do the signing that they put it in the mail. Then you do a return slip, but you don't have to get the return because you can look it up online. But I get the green card, certified return slip. And now you've served it on them, and they got it. Now, they may resend it back, but now they just broke the law because now you can prove they broke the law. That's just more to sue them on. So you serve, you put your papers in, you put your story online, you put your affidavit in there, and the other side doesn't have an affidavit to begin with, so you got your affidavit. Now, when they continue to move and you're outside the jurisdiction, and you know they are because they're playing all kinds of evil stuff and they're bringing up, they make it up as they go there, and so they violate all kinds of your unalienable rights. So then you file a court case against them right in that court, okay, and you make them all defendants, every single one of them, all the lawyers, or the judge, everybody. But the next day, you then got to move it into the federal court. You got to make it a federal case. Now your action has got to be that they have conspired to bring you into this Nisi Prius court, has no authority over you, and they've robbed you of this, that, and the other thing. You know, they've robbed you of access to your child. There's no bigger robbery than that.
Right, that and the jail due process with the expert.
Now, all of it. Yeah,
you got
a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, last time you had said to just forget doing anything in the family court and go straight to the federal court.
Well, yes.
So, but you're saying
there's a little bit I need to do first. Absolutely. You want to go straight to the federal court. Absolutely. But you first got to get a paper trail there. You got to first have them refuse the paper. Right there, it's a problem. You also got to get your affidavit in. Okay, you gotta build your case in that court. You could do it all in one day with three papers coming in, and then another paper coming in at the end of the day. The next day you send it out, which moves it to the federal court, and then you write your paper, and that's in the federal court, which puts all that together and uses all those papers that you just done as exhibits and everything else they've done to you. It all becomes exhibits into your court, and now you're suing them. First of all, remember, family court had no authority, none whatsoever, to incarcerate anyone under any circumstances. How could you? What kind of authority do they think they have to do that? They don't act, and it's supposed to be New York. It's supposed to be a
family
common law court.
Family court didn't do it. What they did was I was before one judge in the family court. Then they did the VPO claim violation, put me into another judge with the criminal court.
Well,
so
still in Nisi Prius court. And did they do?
Right.
Was there an affidavit against you? Sworn affidavit?
I don't think so. Trust me.
There's not.
None. Not there.
You might find a piece of paper that says "I swear" on the bottom, and they sign it, but that's meaningless. It means nothing. They had no subject matter jurisdiction. They acted upon. They made it up. Okay. What was the crime?
Well,
there's
they
no
said I party.
Sent a text. What was your crime?
They said I sent a text message when I shouldn't have, but I was never proven.
That's a crime anyway. That's a crime.
Right. That's ridiculous. And the subject matter was harmless. It was about my baby girl. But so my main thing is how do I stop this? Because my next court case I'm facing could be up to a year, and they've been over the top ridiculous so far. So I'm not going to get surprised either way.
What is your next
court?
But
I want to October 6th. And you were saying I had to be in federal court.
I think
court.
By October 6th we'll be in the courts. All that's going to disappear.
You think so?
I think so, but don't plan on that. You know, plan your case
right. Anyway.
You know,
well, I hope
keep
so.
Up on all this stuff and get those papers together and start filing them.
So in the case that we don't get in time, or there's still, Oklahoma's a little bit behind, I'm starting to build awareness now, but, you know, at the beginning stages, and let's just say the worst case scenario, I'm trying to stop what they're doing and kind of pause it. So that I can delay. So October 6th is coming, and they're getting me for, they're trying to accelerate everything because they claim that I was guilty and I have all these fees. I can't afford it. So any way I can't pay anything, I go to jail. And
they're unbelievable.
So I'm trying to stop it, you know, like put a pause on it, because they're just putting me through it over and over and over again. If I could stop it. So what I'm wondering is if I
make
sue
a federal
them,
case about it. Once you make a
right.
federal case, all actions must stop.
Okay, so that will stop it just by.
But you got to make it strong. You got to know what you're doing. You got to make it strong. You got to show to that federal court you have a federal issue, and you've got them. You can lay them all out. You've been arrested and incarcerated without any authority. They did it without any. There's no sworn affidavit against you. There's no injured party. Okay, there is nothing there. I mean, what do they got? If there's no sworn affidavit, there's no injured party.
Right, and also all the basis off of a lie with guilty till proven innocent situation. So one other quick question on these. They, of course, obviously they have investments in all these little programs that you mandatorily have to take. And I have to do 52 weeks of domestic battery classes. And that's coming up to a deadline right now. And so I'm wondering if there's a way that I could do something quick to stop some of these courses and stuff that they're trying to make me do, or else I'll end up in jail immediately again.
Yeah, the only
sense?
Thing you can do is move it into federal court.
It has to be the whole thing or nothing. I can't just stop one part of it.
Yeah, I don't know of any way that could be done. Look at your case is a due process case. They violated that. They took your freedom away. They didn't even have the authority to do that because they were acting as an nisi prius court to begin with, and they were acting under a corporate charter, which is statutes ultimately, and, you know, they violated you.
Yeah, so I just have to do it all or nothing, basically.
Everything. You pull it all together. Look, when I had to deal with the IRS, when they tried to seize money off me, I sued the IRS, I sued the sheriff, I sued two banks, I sued the county clerk for filing the papers. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. I sued them all. Now, I had no intention of going after the sheriff, but that prevented him from taking anything of mine. I had no intentions of going after the bank, but that prevented him from giving anything away of mine. See, it freezes everything up. That's why I did that. And so they never got my assets while they were trying to go after me.
Okay. So to freeze it, now you're saying I should establish my common law situation.
You sue that judge also. You sue both judges. You sue them both.
Oh,
one for incarcerating. You sue them both. That was a conspiracy between those two judges. And the lawyers in both cases, it was all conspiracy. They all worked together. And that's $25,000 to $50,000 apiece. It's due process, so it's $50,000 minimum. And then every day you're in jail. And I, personally, me, if I ever go to jail, everybody involved in that. Everybody. When I get it, look, I may get out after months or days or years. I don't know. But when I come out, I promise all those people involved, every single one of them, will spend 20 days in jail for every day I'm in. That's my requirement.
Yeah.
I will fight tooth and nail to get that.
Make sure that their liberty is
that's
taken.
Right. How dare they?
Right. So in the family court, though, I need to, now I've had a judgment, I've pled not guilty, which was all the backwards way, had the lawyer, all that. And so now when I go back, I dump the lawyer, I come in with common law, and I say, I do the first paper, I can't remember the name of it, that establishes the common law, and then I say a writ of error or something of judgment.
Let's look at. I'll get into. I got to think about your case and get you a little more intimate before I can tell you the details on some of that. But yeah, there's a lot of things you need to do. First order of business, because you never filed any papers, is you have to file papers as if it's a court case, and that's where you open your court of record at that point. You know, I, one of the people of your state, and in this court of record, sue. So now you make all of them the defendants. I mean, yeah, the defendants. You're the plaintiff, and they're the defendants. Okay.
I do that in family court.
Right, in family court. Okay, and you lay it out, all the damages that they've done to you and everything else and blah, 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 blah. You get your affidavits secured to that tightly to make that point every way through. If you can get other affidavits from other people, that's good. Okay, you've now established your case. You've opened your court on top of their court. You put them on notice. And now you can now come in with writs of error on all of their decisions, and you can file that in there, and you can rescind it all. And then, when you get all that work done, then you file a paper on top of that that moves it into federal court, because it has become a federal issue now, they cannot deal with anything that like due process. That's a federal offense. Okay, so now you're in federal court. Now you do another paper, and in that court paper, you're gonna use all that stuff as your evidence and exhibits. So you don't have to get into a lot of writing, but you want to get right to the point. So you have to have a wherefore clause down on the bottom, and what you're looking for after the wherefore clause. But you got to lay out all the violations and everything you're looking for, everything they've done to you, and tie in another affidavit maybe at that point. Kidnapping, all that stuff is involved in that. How they conspired to, take you into a foreign court, which is what they did. And how they robbed you of your unalienable right to have your child and to be a father to your child. Remember, you know, in any just court, it's not about the parents; it's about the kid. The kid deserves a mother. The kid deserves a father. And if the parents can't work their problems out, then the kid's got to get at least 50% of each. At least, okay? Now, you may have situations where one can only give 40%. Well, if the other party's willing to take the 60%, then that's fine. And then later on, you might be able to take the 50%, and then you work that back. It's got to be given up. Go back to that. Your child deserves both parents, period.
Right.
And these courts
Absolutely.
Don't care about that. They are evil.
Yeah, very much so. That's some of the worst I've ever seen from anybody I deal with. So I focus on first my affidavit on that they don't have jurisdiction to do what they did, and maybe due process or something. But I don't have to do all of it in the family, and then just move it to federal. Then add another affidavit that kind of goes all the way through, because it's so
yeah, it
long
takes
way.
Everything together. I mean, unless you covered it very well in the other court case, and that's fine, and you could just kind of lay it out. But remember, you got to lay out in that case why it's a federal case. And
okay,
it could be a federal case, and if you don't lay it out, then they'll throw it out.
They'll throw it out. So it's just as good to have all the meat in the first one and then just move it over at exhibits. Into
then
the
move it over
one.
And refer to everything. And if there's anything new that you need to put in an affidavit, if not, then you got it, because you're pulling that affidavit in. It already is an exhibit that you can refer to. And remember, you know, you'll get all the real meat on the fact that it's a federal case because of due process, incarceration, and deprivation of your child. And I would also put your child in there as to sue them too. You can sue on your child's behalf because you're coming in as a father. Okay, they've damaged that child. And I'll tell you what, I'd be looking for multi-million dollars for that child, and I'd put it in get an escrow account or create a trust for that child, and because they have been damaged severely. You cannot repair completely the damage that was done there. They've lost time, and they've been traumatized.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I have two other older kiddos, just 5 and 6. So I could put them all together because they've all kind of been equally damaged. They only can see each other in the brief time that I have them together.
Sue for the right to see their father. And they have to sue for the damages for them preventing them from seeing their father. And you can speak on their behalf because you are their father.
Okay. So it'll be a case for me and for my children against
Absolutely.
Them.
You're all the plaintiffs.
Okay. Well, I'm going to keep studying this paperwork and try to figure it out as best I can.
I would not sue. Is this your wife or your girlfriend?
Well, it's my ex-fiance. I was previously married, but I
would not sue her.
Yeah, we had talked about that, and you said you'd have to think about it. She's calling the DA constantly to make sure that I go to
jail. Right,
but
you got to remember, they put that into her, okay? I know their tricks. Look it, they get there, they have to sign papers, and once you get someone to do one evil, it's easy to get them to do a second evil. Before you know, they're doing all kinds of evil, because that's the process. That's what I've been taught, how you work this thing. And so they probably initiated all that evil there in that court. I know they did with a case that I was very much involved with.
Well,
they initiated all the evil right there.
Later on,
they got back together, and they got another child since then. And she, when she left the system, she said, you know, I never should have done any of that. They put me down. They made me do this. I felt committed to that. They pushed me around. I mean, look at, they really, yeah, these people are horrible.
Well, I've seen, I talked to, since I joined the Fathers of Rights Movement before I found you guys, I talked to some, a woman that had some children, and she kind of was being, you know, argued with to do the right thing. So I've seen that. DHS was there with the judge on a break, and they were saying, are you sure you want to give him custody of one of your children? She had talked to me and felt like she wanted to do something different than they were prodding her. So I've seen that. It was like a two-hour argument, she told me. But in my case, unfortunately, I think she was excited to do anything mean she could. Now, that doesn't mean that...
Right. Nevertheless, they empowered her to be able to do that. You do
right.
not want to sue her because she is the mother of your child. And the bottom line is you're really trying to get to a relationship which you can at least deal with each other and both care for the child as best you can under those circumstances. But they got to be friendly, and you got to bring it back, and you got to show her righteousness. Look at when you
yeah.
do really good things to people who are doing real evil things to you, don't think it doesn't play on their mind. It does. And it
yeah.
starts to convict them, okay?
Burning coals
and,
in their lap.
Yeah, exactly. You read on their head, yep. So so you just do the right thing. That's all.
Yeah, and the idea is that in the old way of thinking, I would have to have her punished or else it would keep going. But once they lose the power because I do what you're talking about, then that would be enough to maybe put a stop to it. Like, how could I try this again if everyone's going?
John, could you clarify? Oh, I'm sorry. Pardon me.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
John, could
Thanks,
you clarify
John.
That the caller earlier was trying to make it sound like the common law, despite the fact that you mentioned the two maxims all the time, that it sounds rather nebulous, that a woman's rights might be in question. Can you make it? Can you clarify that the common law is pretty much black and white, and everyone has the same rights?
Hello?
Yeah,
Hello?
We lost you guys.
Okay, I'm
Did
sorry.
You guys
yeah,
drop?
What happened was I had my mic muted for a minute there and I didn't turn it back.
Oh, okay. I thought
yeah.
I was checking Sam and I'm checking Skype. I'm like, uh-oh, something happened.
Yeah, look,
it's your fault. It's John's fault.
Yeah, look, women have the same rights as men. I have no clue on why anybody would think anything different. There may be some things in the past that were distorted, but that was wrongdoing. We need to do the right thing. And again, if we work off the three principles, we follow them. We're going to take a vow to those three principles. Every administrator will take a vow, and every jurist will take a vow. And they're going to vow to adhere to those three principles, which is reasonable, okay? It is reasonable, and they must do it. Otherwise, they cannot be a jurist. And they have to adhere to the two maxims. They got to take care of the injured party, and they have to make sure that there's a crime. And those are the two maxims. I mean, there are others, too, but those are the major ones. Now, with that in mind, I don't know how... I'm not sure how I can talk about something that I'm not aware of that exists in common law. Women have all the rights of a man.
Yeah, I agree
John?
Entirely. Can you also talk about the true bill that you posted online today, or is that for
Monday? Yeah, we posted it up. We posted it up. We're going to read that on Monday. So if people want to get a little peek on it, that's going out Monday. It's going to be mailed on Monday. We didn't send out an email yet. We will send out an email on Monday to let everybody know once it's in the mail. And,
okay, that was my next question. Great.
Yeah. And Monday we will be talking about that. And it is I believe it's a very powerful paper. I think it lays it all out. And when we go through the details of that and how we did it, I mean, and again, look, I want to tell you, we plan certain things and plans get tweaked and then other things happen that we never planned for and it all comes together in a way that we never dreamed. And in my opinion, it's God working here. And we are in a very good position at the moment. And the hammer is about to come down in a way that we didn't even think about.
Yeah, great work. Very powerful paper. Great work. I appreciate it. Thank you for all you do.
John?
Yes.
John,
yes.
Neil in Michigan?
Hey, Neil.
Hi. I was just wondering if you had any updates on Florida, Dixie County?
Well, there will be probably on Monday an update. I talked with Roger a little bit, and I don't have the big picture yet, so I can't, I don't want to lay it out. But they may have an update on Monday. We'll see what happens on Monday.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But things are happening
Hello,
in
John.
Florida.
John?
Things
Hello?
Are happening in Florida, and there's a lot of papers to be filed down there by us also. So it's and also Tennessee. Things are happening in Tennessee. Big stuff is happening in both of those states and in New York. So we've got three states going with heavy-duty stuff, and it's all come together at the same time. We couldn't have asked for a better scenario.
Great.
Hello, John?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
I have there's a case I want to ask you about, and it's regarding Family Court. It's been a while ago, actually. One of the children, they're 18 now, and at the time, the mother was 9 months, going on actually 10, and there was a cookout, and she had come up to me, and she was young, like 19, and she said, "You know what? I took 2 sips of a cooler. I hope this will help me go into labor." I said, "Oh, no. No, no, no. You don't do that. Da, da, da." She said, "Well, I didn't know that." She never drank, never did drugs, nothing. Guess what? A little after that, she goes into labor, and she goes to the hospital. Well, anyway, the social workers came. She had 4 other children who were honor roll students, very well taken care of. She was working, her apartment. They came and checked all the children out, and everything was fine. They released the baby. Then they came back every single day, and they were walking through the house, and I think she had twin beds in the room. And one of the twin beds, she had placed the mattress and everything to the side because the two girls were 4 and 5. They wanted to sleep together. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, they picked up all the children because of the fact one of the social workers went to school with her and knew her and did not like her. And so they made up one of the accusations was that the two girls, 4 and 5, were sleeping in the same twin bed. Like that. So when she went to court, they said all the teachers came, the caretakers, she had some of the kids with daycare, and everybody came as saying this girl was an impeccable mother, she never drank anything. And they took her in and left everyone else out. And then they came out and says, "Well, you guys will come to the next one." And the next one was a year later. Well, it's been the oldest at that time was 7, and she's 18 now. And they took all of the children when they only had one call on one. And to my understanding, they can only deal with the child that they had a call on, which was the baby. Well, anyway, the children, a couple of them have been adopted out. One is in an institution because she never would give in to them and say that her mom was bad. And so then she got herself together. She lost her job. They had her jumping through hoops, going to different classes for like 5 years, alcohol classes, parenting classes, the whole thing, to where she just lost her job, lost her home, everything. So at this point, she remarried and had 2 other children.
What county
she,
does she live?
In Ohio. And okay. This is going to boil it up. This is going to round it up. She married and had 2 other children. And when she went into the hospital with this last baby, they came in and said that they had gotten a report from her when she had a checkup at 6 months that she had amphetamine in her system. Now, I looked up amphetamine, and amphetamine does no harm to a baby. It's an aspirin. But they claim that at six-month checkup, which no call or anything until she had the baby, and they end up taking those two children. So now she's almost died, like three times, because when she had the baby, they immediately had her running from this place to that place in the dead of winter, and she has a bad heart, and so she's been in and out of the hospital, and she's not doing well. So I wanted to ask you, with that type, because eventually we're gonna lose her, through everything that she's been through and medical. Because when she had the baby, the doctor said that she must rest. She has high blood pressure and a lot of stuff. They had her running here, there, do this, do that, only because of something that came up on her record when she was 6 months pregnant, which she doesn't take anything. She doesn't even drink. It's been years later, and she hasn't even taken a drink. She's not a drinker. She's not any of that. So I just wondered, with this time going by, what could possibly be done? Because this is one of the most horrific cases from Child Protective Services that I have ever witnessed. I can understand her uneducation from the alcohol, and that she probably should have been sent to a few classes. But her whole life was destroyed, and now she's near death. So I was just wondering what your thoughts would be.
How old is she today?
She's 31. She was like, the oldest child is grown, and the oldest daughter is with her. She found her. But then the other children are
destroyers of life. They're destroyers of life. The family court is the most evil thing I've ever seen in our nation. I mean, nothing is more evil than the family court. They destroy every single family. They seem to be created for that purpose. They were given special, privileges to be very, sort of loose to deal with families, but they took it the other direction. They have no desire to bring two people together. They have no desire to work out the problems with them. They have no desire to take care of these children other than to steal them from people. And they make money on this system one way or the other. They will either put the father against the mother or the mother against the father, and they usually take the mother's side. And then they'll go through. I'm getting feedback on someone. I'm not sure who.
It's me. It's Lydia Reed, and I'm calling from Manhattan, and I'm sorry I joined late. But
Let me finish up with this one, though. They do these evil, evil things, and then when there is no two parents, then they just come take the children. They saw an opportunity. They saw someone who was vulnerable, someone who couldn't defend themselves, and they just destroyed them. Look at these people have no empathy. These people, I don't believe, have a soul other than to just, I didn't want to say, look at, these are evil people. I can't even comprehend being inside their brain. I don't know how they sleep at night. They have no feelings or anything for anyone, and I'd like to see them all go to jail for life. That's my opinion. But of course, I couldn't sit on those juries because I'm a lifer for them people. And I'd go in with it, so I wouldn't be able to sit on that jury. But I can't take it no more, because I hear so many stories like this across the nation. I can go for hours telling you horror stories just like this. I can't take hearing them no more, because they pain me to hear them. And I just think of the suffering that these people and these children are going through.
If all of this comes down to a test, you need to know, I know this because I was taught this in medical school, and you can find any doctor who will back me up. Those tests are notoriously inaccurate. So if you can get a copy of the test If the test is too sensitive, you're going to get a false positive, which frequently happens. And, you know, like I have friends who have lived through this. I have friends in the military who have lived through this. I have a friend in medical school who lived through this. I mean, we all heard the stories of, you know, you eat a poppy seed bagel and the next thing you know, you're testing positive for drugs. And all you did was eat, like, you know, a lemon poppy seed muffin. But it happens. So if all this comes down to one test, get your hands on the test and deal with the facts and find out who did the test, what the sensitivity is, repeat the test, have an expert talk, give you an affidavit to talk about how you can get a false positive from this test.
Right. But the thing is with this, the thing is the test was done because they're done on all mothers, and she had just, I saw her, she had taken 2 sips. But, okay, that was fine. I mean, okay, that was an alert. Yes, you should check it out. But the point of it is, after the fact, because the baby, the newborn baby, was the only issue, once they checked those other children, then they had no right to those other children, because only way CPS can come to you and question you about your child, one child or all children, whomever the call has been made on. So once they found out those other children were fine, you know, and they released the baby back to her.
It sounds like no evil was ever done on behalf of this girl. Even if you make a mistake, look, it doesn't matter. There's nothing wrong here. Okay, these people are just evil. They do what they want because there's money to be made in these children. There's money to be made through the courts. There's all kinds of things happening here that people don't understand.
Yeah, John, that's what I'm saying. That is so evil. This is, okay, now imagine 5 of your children being snatched for that, okay? Now years have gone by. You're just getting yourself back together. You get married, and you have 2 other children. 1 is 3, and 1 is a newborn. I think he's probably maybe a month and a half old now. They came on some doctor's office. The doctor that she went to said that she had an aspirin, amphetamine. Amphetamine is not a drug. You can look it up.
Right.
She
I got all that. And they took the other two children. Yes, because they're evil.
There's
more money in it. That's all. That's the reason they did it. They don't. They'll make up an excuse. They don't care. I know, and she's dead now. Listen. It's very hard to believe what's going on. Okay, it's very hard to believe. But I'll tell you, I've come to a conclusion because I've seen too much personally. And I've heard too much across this nation from people who have called me on the phone and talked to me for hours on these things. And I'm telling you that these are real things, and it's all evil. They know, look at their marks to them. They know that they can't do anything. They know they don't know what to do, and it's the court system. And they don't know what to do, and they're stuck, and they destroy people. It's all about money. It's all about money, and it's very hard to believe that people do these evil things. It's very difficult. To think,
John,
if you're a person that has feelings and compassion and empathy, you know, it's hard to realize that there are people that don't have those. And that's what they fill these offices with, so it seems, because they don't seem to have any concern for their fellow human being at all, and especially children.
Right.
So I hear you. There's nothing...
Let
me just finish this one point. The only thing that could be done at this point, you know, she's in Ohio. If she was local here, then I might try to do something with her now, but I can't. She's too far away. But, you know, I'm a sucker for this. I just get so lost in this kind of thing. It really bothers me. But let me tell you, the only thing the only hope that she has, she can, maybe Lydia can come up with some thoughts, and I can give her some more thoughts, but she doesn't sound like she's able to be able to take care of these problems, that she'll be able to make this battle. But the thing is when the grand jury gets in seat, I would hope that the people in Ohio is going to look at this case, and I'm sure there's a lot of cases they need to be concerned with.
Well, John,
deal with
these people. John, if something happens, this, you know why? I need her. But I'm saying I'm going to keep on with this battle even if I lose her. because they're my grandchildren.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So,
John?
Well,
so,
I hear you. We're going to get them when we get the power. We're going to get them.
Yeah. Well,
and that's
yeah,
the other
but
thing. Right here, Grandma, they won't give those children to Grandma. Look, I had a similar situation with this with my youngest sister who lived many states away. Okay? And the same thing happened that they took her children. I tried to get the children. They wouldn't even talk to me. So
This is what I'm going to say, that it's a setup all around. That hotline is a major issue because you can have a friend that do not like you, and they can get on that phone, and they can call them, and if a grandparent, aunt, uncle, which I don't know too many people that haven't had a call. This lady right across the street from me just got a call from the neighbor down the street because she was mad because they had words. So the first thing she got on the phone, because she has two little children, and she called CPS, and she was right over there across the street.
Right.
So what I'm saying is once you have one call, and that could be, and most of them are vindictive, and they have them set up to be vindictive because you don't have to leave a name. You don't have to leave a telephone number. A lot of it would stop if they would demand that everyone call that hotline, leave a name, a number, and if this comes out to be vindictive, then we can bring it back to you
charges. They need to go even further than that. They have to do an affidavit. Okay, that's what they need to do. So, but anyway, let's move on. I hear what you're saying. I feel your pain, and I hear what you're saying. It's horrible. I hear these stories all day long. I really do. It's horrible.
This
Someone else wanted to pipe in there. Who?
This is Justin from Washington State.
Hey, how you doing, Justin?
I'm actually kind of stressed. There's some children that are actually currently in harm's way, and there's something that me and my wife can do about it, but we don't know what to do. Basically, first of all, the children were illegally, one of them was illegally searched and seized from the house, and I know that because of the research I've done on the situation and everything. We've also had, prior to that, actually the sheriff in our county just barged into the house with no reason, just to scream at my wife. But anyway, all that aside, and there's tons of history. I could go back to 1991, but I'm not going to. One of the children that's in most danger right now is with a man who has no evidence that he is the father of that child, and they've placed him there, and he is extremely bad for children. A child probably isn't even going to school, has had to repeat the same grade several times, and we want to find a way to force him to take a DNA test. Because we've tried everything. It's a Superior Court judge is who's dealing with this. And the last time we were there, I was not educated enough. He forced us to do go to a mediator just to be able to see the child. And I would have told him that he didn't have jurisdiction without our consent or a jury, but I didn't know anything about that. And so I don't even know how to get back in there to talk to him. Let's see, what else? And I also want to indict the county. I want a full assessment done because this has been going on for a long time. We used to have a police department here. We no longer have that police department. And what happened was in 1991, they finally got caught. There was child pornography being sold out of this small town here and out of the county. And they brought it to the police's attention, and the police ignored it. And so the mother went to an attorney, and she got $750,000 from the city, and the city rewarded the police that ignored the situation with $25,000 each. The only person that went to jail was the person that was in the photos molesting the child. The person that was taking the pictures and sold them was not, nothing happened to him. They let him off. I read this in the paper.
Yeah,
I
look, there's a lot of, look at, a lot of this, you know, we don't know
anything too much about
these kind of cases, so I can't really comment on most of this stuff. The bottom line is you know, we have to think about these things. And let's take a child. If someone has knowledge that a child is being injured in some way or molested or something of that nature, the only way anything can or should be done is if that person is willing to do an affidavit and file that complaint on behalf of that child. And then it must be acted upon. And then they have to do an investigation. But now we have a system that automatically is going to make that person guilty. And when they may not even be guilty, okay, unfortunately, unless we have a virtuous court, and that's what we're trying to get to, is a virtuous court, we have to get a court of justice. And we, the people, have got to take the control, and we have to act with sense of honor, you know, all the basic principles, you know, honor and justice and mercy. And we have to consider the injured party, which can't really speak maybe or is frightened. Maybe they're old enough to speak, but they're frightened. And we got to figure out what's going on. But I'll tell you what, before you move against someone with any of these things, you better get someone that's got the, that's going to do has some evidence or something, you know, an eyewitness. There's got to be a sworn affidavit. Okay,
well, I'm an eyewitness. I saw one of the children after they were molested.
Well, okay. However, if you have enough that you can write down in an affidavit that is good enough that it, you know, it's got to be an affidavit that has charges, and you have to have some seen something or somehow know something, and then you can do something. That's the only way. But I'll tell you what. You're in what state? Washington.
Yeah, and everything I've turned in.
Oh, they'd love to. Look, I tell you, Washington. They're going to love to get these kids and just take them away and put them in a worse situation or the same kind. They don't care out there. Look, I heard a lot of really bad things about Washington State. You guys have a lot
sir,
of kids.
Sorry to break in. Why don't you call Women Organized Against Rape in Philadelphia? They have a 24-hour hotline, but try to call during normal business hours and ask to speak to whoever's manning the hotline, and. You know, ask them what kind of things do the authorities need to hear from you if you, you know, if a child is voicing these kinds of things to you. Women Organized Against Rape is trained. They have to.
Can I just respond to that really quick? We had a special deputy here that was trained just for this. He was trained for domestic violence and sexual assault against children. And he actually stepped down after this happened because we did everything correctly. We went through all of that. We gave them everything they needed. He was the person trained to do that. And he did his job. And he told them he's no longer responding to any domestic violence calls or any sexual assault because they will not do anything correctly.
He's in a state that's really, really bad for children. I'm hearing a lot of stories out of Washington that are real, real serious, worse than any of the states I've heard about. You guys need to be working towards real hard towards just getting the common law in there, working with us at National Liberty Alliance and taking control of these courts and really bringing justice back. And I don't know what to tell you right now because you have a situation that it seems if you do an affidavit I don't know that it's going to go anywhere, and the child's going to be in another situation too. So I don't know how to advise you on that. It's not illegal.
Sending evidence to the sheriff directly and to heads of CPS and every CPS agent in the jurisdiction because I have all their email addresses. I sent it to them. I also asked them. The prosecutor told me to ask them for proof that they actually did an investigation because I know for a fact that they didn't, and I have not gotten any response from them.
Right. Well, again, the system is corrupt. That's why we have to get these grand juries in. I hate to say you got to wait. Look, but I tell people all the time that call me from around the nation that are trying to get their children back in some really horrific things, and they're not able to defend themselves. They're not able to articulate in court. They don't understand anything. They need to go through training. I can't get out there. I'm not even there anyway. But
right.
You know, so what are you going to do? The only hope I can give them is look at work with NLA, help to develop what we're doing, and sometime in the future, hopefully near, we're going to get into the system, and then we're going to start fixing these cases that are around us once we secure the nation. Remember, it seems horrible to say this, but the bottom line is we have a duty to secure the nation first and foremost, because we're about ready to lose everything, and then those children, it's going to be even worse for a lot more children. So I mean. You know, it's so hard, these things. It's difficult, but you have to keep focus and moving. But you know, look at the Calvary's coming, so to speak. God willing, things work out for us in the very near future. Calvary's coming.
Well, maybe this is something to discuss on Saturday as far as a call to prayer about it.
All right, we can talk about that. Right.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time.
Anybody else? You're welcome. Anybody else?
Yeah, John, can I ask a quick question about the Fifth Amendment?
Go right ahead. Yep.
The Fifth Amendment says I don't have it in front of me to read, but before you can be tried for any capital or infamous crime, I was listening to the gentleman from Florida, and he was presenting to the Greater Orlando, you know, Tea Party, and he said, you know, infamous crime means any crime where you're be put in jail for a day or more. And so if you're going to be tried for a capital or infamous crime, you need to be indicted by a grand jury. Is that true?
Absolutely. You cannot be indicted for any crime. I mean, you cannot be incarcerated for any crime or tried for any crime without being indicted by a grand jury. Nobody has the authority to arrest and incarcerate anyone under any circumstances, with the exception, of course, of a violent act. Okay, now someone gets picked up and they need to be dealt with, but you got to get them before a grand jury, you know.
They cannot
be convicted
one
without
would ask, if one wants to see one the grand jury minutes, what would one do? Just contact the prosecutor and say, I want to get a copy of the grand jury minutes, and you know, I'm willing to pay for the transcript.
You cannot get a copy of the grand jury's minutes. Maybe, look, at the fact that they're keeping minutes on a grand jury is horrific. That secret has nothing to do with anyone or anything, okay? The only thing, and everything is secret in there. Even the witnesses that come in there, people ought to leave. And I'll tell you what, we know that when a witness comes up before the grand jury, that there's always the prosecutor goes in with them. Get out of here. Take a hike, buddy. You've already given us a story. You can go home for the day. We're going to talk to that witness. Go. You don't need the prosecutor there because they want to control everything. And the fact that they take notes on anything or their meetings is wow. You can't do that.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Does the accused have a right to say, oh, there's a grand jury? I'd like to go talk to the grand jury. Okay, so then the only way that you could be denied the right to talk to the grand jury is if you signed a waiver to talk to the grand jury. Is that correct?
No. When we're in power, anybody wants to talk to the grand jury, they're welcome to talk to the grand jury.
Stand right now, if you're accused of a crime.
They make it up as they go. No, they're not going to let you talk to the grand jury.
Okay, it was my understanding that you should be informed. Well, in any case, there should be a true bill that you could look at, right?
Well, when you say a true bill, you know, there are different true bills, but what do you mean? Well, a true bill on what?
Well, I mean, there has to be some paperwork that says there was a grand jury, the grand jury was convened, and the grand jury...
Oh, absolutely. The grand jury must make a conclusion. They write three kinds of bills. One is a bill of information, which ultimately is a mandamus. The other one is, of course, a bill of presentment, which means the grand jury on its own initiative discovered something and made decisions and indicted or whatever. And then, of course, there's the indictment itself, which comes through a prosecutor by the state. But the grand jury makes a decision. They'll get assistance from someone to write it up. They will, talk. And when we get in charge, it'll be with the administrators. We'll assist them to write it up. And we'll probably talk with the prosecutor to make sure that certain things are there, certain codes and stuff, depending on what kind of crime it was. And that's how it works. So, yeah, once it's filed... It's filed
where
for anyone.
Where would the grand jury indictment be filed? At the courthouse where you're being tried?
It's filed with the court clerk, yes.
Okay, so if you were tried, for example, in, criminal court, I'm making this up as I go along, criminal court, Manhattan, you would call up the criminal court clerk and say, hey, I'd like to see the grand jury indictment.
Well, you go down to the file and you can look into the file and you can see whatever's in the file. It's a good question on an active case that isn't totally. There may be certain. There could be certain restrictions there. I haven't thought about that, and I don't know. I have to study on that. But there could be some certain restrictions there.
Okay, so any of this nonsense that anybody would tell you saying, oh, no, we could indict you without a grand jury, the prosecutor can do whatever he wants, the charges were small, that's all
in
garbage.
Russia, maybe, or China, but not here. Funny. But, of course, they do it here. They do it, but it's all illegal. Look, at every person that does that, they need to go to jail.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Appreciate it. All right.
Okay. Anybody
John,
else?
I have a question for administrators. Once everything, with the courts become finalized and everybody is in place, will it be set up where maybe a administrator or two will just handle family court issues and then maybe another one will handle
everybody will work. Everybody will work things as they can work it in, and someone might have a more desire to do this, and the other people don't mind, and fine, that's okay. But our experience mm-hmm. should be rounded. We should be rotating ourselves and doing all the work,
of course.
Okay. But but you see, we're creating the administrative courses now. I haven't messed with them this week, but in a week at least. But we're getting back to that. We're creating administrative courses in the sense that video instructional things. Of course, the common law and everything that we set up for that one to become to go through a schooling to learn common law and the history of the jury and how things work and Constitution and so on and American history and so on. I think it's a 120-hour course, and it's going to have 600 questions, and that should be coming soon. We've had some problems with that, but it should be coming soon. Now, anybody that wants to take that course can take it totally for free. They just have to go on the site and sign up on it. Now, once they do that, anybody who wants to be an administrator, they would check the box that they're looking to become an administrator. And then we would know who the people are becoming administrators. No one will become an administrator if they don't take that course. And then there's instructional videos we're putting together for administrators, which is a step-by-step thing on everything, on how everything works, how to get a point of a resolution on how to get into the courts and to get right down to getting the funding from the controller, everything. we're working on all of that. That matter of fact, that's already done, that part. We just have to put it in video form. We haven't put it in video form yet. But answering the phones, we're doing a how-to on that and keeping files, writing papers, writing informations, the structure of informations. And then, of course, National Liberty Alliance will always be here for Monday night calls. Will probably turn into a call for the purpose of discussing situations and how-tos. For further, if someone needs assistance in writing a paper, we're going to work with that. I mean, basically, you'll have the how-tos, but there may be such a situation come and ask questions like here. But that's once we're in. But no one is going to become an administrator unless they take those courses. And that's how we weed out the people that really aren't going to go study. We can't let people come in that are not going to become qualified to do this. So they have to become qualified. And the payment, it's a very handsome salary. But also, the other three people can get rid of one of those people if they're a problem. Okay.
Wow.
And if you do get rid of someone and they appeal, we set up a system where they can go to the county next door and they can hear the case, and they can make a decision. They may agree, they may disagree. But if the person is really a problem and they get put back in and they do violate again, then you can take that to you could get rid of them and you can go to county next door to another county. And let someone hear the case and make the decision. The point is we need people that are honorable. So we have to be on our best honor. If we can't express honor and really reflect that in our phone calls, in our relationship with people, as we do orientation, as we deal with people and talk with them or question them, if we can't really learn to be honorable people, then that person needs to be removed. This is a very, very important delicate job, and everybody's got to be hurt. I mean, you have to have the patience to hear everybody out.
Right. John, I just wanted to elaborate on what, I was saying, and I thank you for all that, because it's like anything. I mean, like whomever you're dealing with, If you're dealing in a job situation or in an office situation, you have to deal with that accordingly. I mean, sometimes we can become human and to the point where, you know, you have to draw the line. You just have to say, you know, you have to be kind, forgiving, but then you have to be very, very steadfast.
You can't allow yourself to be a pushover. Right. You can't
right.
allow yourself to be a pushover. And the other three will help the person who might apparently be a pushover. And at some point, that may be a problem that interferes with them doing their duty. But you work with that person to help that person. They got to get out there and make bold decisions, but they have to look at. That's why every decision, if you do it with a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy, you're going to make the best decision there. And let me tell you something. There are some people that just don't deserve mercy. You got to ask yourself the question, does this person deserve mercy? You know, nope, they don't deserve it, so that's out of there. But you got to consider it.
John, Neil in
yes.
Michigan.
Hey, Neil.
Yeah, I was just thinking once common law gets established, do you foresee a problem with all these other common law groups that are existing and not doing things the correct way getting into the courtrooms themselves?
I'm not sure I understand the questions.
Once common law is established, and let's say that we get seated in the court, there will be many other common law groups that exist already and not really doing things, you know, in the common law fashion.
Right.
Do you foresee a problem with that and them?
No, not really. No, because if they get into the system where we're at and they become administrators, hopefully they're going to go through the course and then they're going to go through a lot of other things and they're going to get it. And if they don't because they got an illness, maybe they're self-absorbed, maybe they got an ego, maybe they got a power problem. I don't know what it is, but if they have those kind of problems, they will be seen eventually. They'll be seen by the other three, and the other three have a duty to deal with this. And if that person can't be repaired somehow in order to operate correctly, then you get rid of them. Here's the key thing. We take a vow, okay? And when you take that vow, you got two maxims and three principles that you're taking a vow to, okay? You took that vow, you got to act that out now. When you act outside of that kind of a character, the other three should clearly see it, and they should see it quickly. And they should say, wait a second here. And then they should put them on the line. They break their vow. They got to go. I mean, look, they may break their vow, and then they say, oh, you know, I didn't realize I got lost. You know, okay. Yeah, and you work that out. But look, if this person is a problem, you just got to get rid of them. Because, look, you're going to have people that are mentally disturbed. That's going to happen. You're going to have people that that have a serious ego problem or a person that has no compassion, no empathy. They're just dead inside. I mean, you're going to get those people from time to time, and we got to be, you know, we got to be nice to them, and we got to deal with them in an appropriate way. But we also got to be firm, and so you got to pray for wisdom on that. Is the best I can say. But three people can work it out, and you can always get counseling from other people in other counties. You can discuss this at round tables, or you can bring it to the Monday call and say, hey, look, and people can come up with ideas and help work it out. But so, you know, decision. Look, to make the right decisions are hard. Okay.
Yeah. No.
It's really, on the one hand, very easy, and I'll tell you, when you have a relationship with the Lord, it becomes real easy, because you're always looking to just do the Lord's will and not your own. So that makes it real easy, and the Lord's will is to do the right thing. But you know, some people struggle with a decision, and you got people who can't even make a decision. Okay. And that person obviously will not be qualified for this job.
And
we'll have to figure that out. We, the people, have to figure that out.
Right. Well, that's what I was thinking, that you know, not everybody's going to go by the rules. There are groups of common law individuals that well, in their own communities, say they are the common law. They're not going to take the oaths. They're going to do it their way.
Well, they won't be in it. They won't come in. They're not going to be able to get in. They don't take the oath, they can't come in. They don't take the oath, they can't, because to try to push past that and to come in a mob way, well, that's a wrongdoing, and that's an indictable offense, and other counties can get involved and indict those people in another county that are just destroying people, you know.
I think what he's asking is there going to be a parallel with two different parties doing the same thing.
Right, common law.
No, I don't think so. I think, look, again, in order to get into the system, they got to come through us from the standpoint of taking the course. They got to become qualified. They got to become educated. People may think they're educated. Well, even if they think they're educated, they're going to take the course because they got to go through it and make sure they're rounded out. I mean, look, I haven't met many people, other than people in NLA, I haven't met anyone who's read Lysander Spooner. In all of these things, I bumped into a lot of people that say they know common law, but they haven't looked at Spooner. They have a lot of them haven't done the 5,000-year leap. Okay, they haven't done the American history course. You know what happens? They read some stuff on a website, and then they think they figured everything out, and it's very simple. But it's not all. It is kind of simple on the one hand, but then you get poison, and you got problems. You got to figure out how to get rid of the poison. People don't know they've been poisoned, you know? So hopefully that's what our course is going to do, is take the poison out, and then their relationship with us as we get into roundtables and conversations. We are going to have a – once we start the administrative course, once we get that going, then we're going to have a 1 hour a week – we're going to start off at 1 hour a week and see how that goes, but there'll be a required classroom-type course 1 hour a week. And it's going to be required in order to become an administrator because we have to do this the right way. We are not qualified to these positions until we go through the courses. Now, desperate times calls for desperate measures, and we definitely will do a better job than the people in there. So we could be going through these courses as we do the best we can. But we want to, we want to be real careful on it. Wait 1 minute. Rick, by the way, what time are we going to phase out with a close down on that? Music or anything. While we're waiting for Rick, go ahead.
It's Tanner again from Oklahoma. So based on what these other two gentlemen were just talking about, and I was kind of wondering about this, so we have people that may be maliciously looking at a way to undermine this just as much as mm-hmm. they've done everything else
sure.
over the century.
Sure.
And then we may also have just the people
midnight,
that are still...
John.
Water,
sorry.
Please.
What time?
Sorry, I was listening to the monitor speakers, which are about 30 seconds after the main.
What time are we going to phase out?
About at 12 midnight exactly on the dot. The
okay.
BK factor starts at 12 midnight exactly.
Just give me your cue, okay? All right, you can do
okay.
it on the Skype. Go ahead, finish off.
So you have people that are maliciously intending on doing what they've done over the last several centuries or whatever they've been doing.
Yeah, but bear in mind one thing, because this gets neutralized very quickly. They got to be in 3,142 counties. That's they got to get across the whole geographical area. They're only going to be able to get little isolated areas because other than that. But we'll see who they are real quick. Look, we have problems with infiltrators right here in NLA, and I got some people who are really upset that I don't move quick enough or anything. My theory or my figuring is this. Give them as much rope as they need to hang themselves. I'd rather find them now than have to find them later because it'll be easy to deal with them now. And so from time to time, we do get someone who hangs themselves. But it just takes a little time. We have to have patience to figure out who those people are. When we get into oppositions, anybody acting outside of what we've set up as the criteria, that vow, everybody needs to meditate on that vow. People should download that vow. It's up on nationallibertyalliance.org. You go to the Juris tab, highlight it, and then come down to Juris Documents, and in that list you'll see Juris Vow. Print that out and meditate on that. Think about how someone can do evil and not be seen to be breaking that vow, and you're going to find out they can't.
So okay? if in a state, let's say like a whole state has a problem, they can't get it done, they could go to another state or the national unified grand jury to help solve the problem. So the people still have the ability to
take back
anything
they do.
There have been cases where a grand jury was indicted by another grand jury because of all the evil going on, okay? So it can happen, but I think the vow is going to clean it right out. Go take
right.
Download that vow and look at it. The whole state cannot become corrupt because they'd have to get into every county and take control in every county. And remember, they're not going to get all those positions every county and four positions in every county. They don't have that kind of manpower or ability. And I doubt they'll go through our course. And if we go through our course, who knows? We may convert them. But you know, they got to go through our course. They got to take the vow, break the vow, and continue to break the vow. You can't continue if you break the vow. You just can't. It's a wrongdoing. You're out of here.
So as long as we're
educating. If someone breaks the vow not realizing, say, hey, look, you know, we took a vow. Oh, yeah, you know, right, I shouldn't, you know. Look, as long as we're working, because we got to work on our own behavior. We have to control our own behavior. And that gets tough sometimes.
Right. Well, I'm trying to answer this question for people that are asking me these questions. So basically, with education through the kids or children, and we're so liquid because we have every single county, that protects us constantly from any of this happening. And the people still have the power and with other
right.
counties and other states, so that it will never get back to where it was.
I don't see it's possible at all because the people are now involved, and we're going to maintain. Forget about a union. No one's going to protect anything. Look at you. You act out of line. You got to leave because it's a very serious job, and if you got a really serious character flaw, that's going to be found out, and they're going to have to leave. And we'll be about that for a long time.
So how do we stop from repeating history how they did it the first time?
Well, first of all, the people have never been in control of the grand jury. It worked out pretty well with the way they were working it, but the evil came in and just destroyed everything and made them all puppets. And so that took over time. Look at Lysander Spooner was complaining in 1852 that he doesn't even know if there's a really correctly run system even in America in 1852. So
it never started right.
The problem's been around for a long time. We the people never really took full control, okay?
Mm.
And we didn't realize we had to. We realize it now. We have to do it. We have to take this nation back, and this is how we do it. We got to take control and put these people back in their place. So that's where we're at. So it's a new
move. That's the problem that we're talking about right now because, see, even if the floodgates opened up right now for the NLA and the common law the way we understand it, but there are all these other groups. Say, for example, in Michigan, we have so many counties constituted, but they're not. We only have enough for maybe two grand juries. Let's
mm-hmm.
say the other counties.
Well. We're not grand juries, though. Okay.
No.
We
only have enough numbers to form two grand juries. So we're outnumbered. In Michigan, if they
right, but you're not going to look at the people that have signed up on NLA are potential jurists, of course, and they're interested in going forward. We're going to call on them all, but there's no way we're going to be drawing out an NLA's membership only because that in itself would be a wrongdoing. We need to draw out of the population, general. Okay, and the voting rolls may be a good way to go. I know there's some people in this that are sovereigns, and they think that that's evil and everything, but it's not true. Okay, what's evil is they put that U.S. Citizen thing in there, and that doesn't mean anything anyway because it's a fraud. We give it no validity, and they'll never bring it up in court anyway. But the bottom line is that you're going to be drawing off of the people. Okay, so what we're looking to fill right now, our big job is to find four people in every county. So we start off by finding at least one leader in every county, and those leaders should be looking for partners. People are interested. I think once we start doing the course online and we start to develop the administrators and they start clicking the buttons and they register on a page and we'll start to see who's going on, what's going on, there's going to be an excitement and a move. Plus, it's a handsome salary. You know, it's a professional salary. So it's paying between, if I recall, I think it's the $56,000 and $153,000. That's the salary range, if I recall.
All right, John.
So, okay, that's
Thank
it for
so
tonight.
Thank you so much for tuning in to John's show.
Thanks, John.
All right, good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next time. Take it away, Rick.
Stay tuned to the BK Factor up next.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Yes, go right ahead. We can go for a couple more minutes.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead. Just for a couple minutes because I want to
okay.
go to bed.
Oh, bless your heart. Of course you do. This is Tricia from Nevada, and I had talked with you about my unlawful arrest on Monday or Friday the 15th, and then this additional thing for my husband came in, which is a bench warrant for his arrest. And you had given me some general guidelines, and I just have a couple of specific questions. Regarding a bench warrant that has been already acted upon where I was unlawfully arrested, I'm working on an affidavit to put into the New York case for that. And we'll be mailing it off very shortly, making a couple of extra changes to it. But regarding that one, would it be better to do a quo warranto on that or perhaps a writ of error, in your opinion?
Well, I don't remember all the details. I kind of remember us talking about this, but I don't remember all the details. A quo warranto is not something you'd want to do now.
Okay.
So, and you got to understand, you know, the purpose of a quo warranto. Before you would even do that, you would do a mandamus. But again, a writ of error is what tell me, refresh my memory.
Well, in this particular case, speaking to my arrest, because I've got two issues here, speaking to my arrest with this bench warrant, it's saying here that there was a failure to appear, which is absolutely incorrect because I had done special appearances. I even attended by telephonic, because this is a court that's quite far away from me, about 4 or 5 hours. And I gathered my witnesses and was going into the court telephonically at the particular time and then was refused to speak in the court without paying a $50 fee. So we went ahead and did our own court of record, and I sent that in, and I've utilized a notary who is my court of record magistrate, essentially my witness, to put in their non-response to what I put in. And then they put out this bench warrant for my arrest for non-appearance, which is just not true. And actually have a judgment against them for what they've done as far as non-response, because, of course, it's a traffic citation with no harm party and all of that nonsense, usual stuff. So that's
a bench warrant for a traffic violation?
Yes, yes. I did tell him the failure to appear there. Yes, a bench warrant.
But it doesn't matter. You know, a traffic violation, it's a rinky-dink court to begin with. It's a town court. Or village court, or even less than that. What kind of court is this?
It's a you know, a small township court in Humboldt County.
Sue them all. Take them into federal court. Sue them all. Extortion.
Okay. Well, it is extortion because we had my.
And they've arrested you. They've incarcerated you already.
They incarcerated me. It was
how
horrible.
Long? How long?
It was overnight. It was almost 24 hours by the time
okay,
I was
they
out.
Okay, they all need 20 days in jail, minimum. And it's worth, you know, your time in jail has got to be worth $25,000 to $50,000 a day. So, your unalienable rights, $25,000 to $50,000. And if you go after the cop, you go after the judge, and you go after the prosecutor. And you bring them into federal court because they violated your unalienable rights. They've incarcerated you. They kidnapped you. All that stuff. They have no authority to do that. None.
And
traffic court does not have any authority. My goodness, they don't have authority. You know, even these courts that appear to be real, and you go into those courts, they're equity courts, which really goes into a chancery court. It's a nisi prius court. They have no authority, no ability to incarcerate or fine. We've got plenty of Supreme Court rulings.
When they showed me the warrant, I was in the sheriff's office doing some business with my husband.
They recognized my name. I told you I'm on their list. I'm not kidding, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They recognized my name and came out with this warrant. They wouldn't even show us warrant, first of all. I said, I want to see it. And I had to ask two or three times. I asked for their oath of office and their bonds, and they looked at me like a cow out of a new gate. And, you know, they just – and then I look at the warrant. I look at it, and I say, this is an invalid warrant. This isn't even me. And I threw it back at them. I said, that's not me. If you arrest me, it will be unlawfully against, you know, threat, duress, and coercion, and you're going to be personally liable. And there's a whole group of officers there by this time. So, I mean, I couldn't even get all their names. There was so many. There was at least six or eight of them, of these sheriff's deputies, because it's right in their office.
Hey, John.
Right. Yep.
Hey, John, this is Tammy, because I was just listening also to the caller. And, you know, that's why I asked earlier about the traffic court, because she's, in fact, correct. Depending on what they give you the ticket or summons for, if you show up, if you don't pay the fine, because you could have shown up and then may not pay the fine at their designated time or their destined date, they put a bid warrant. She's, in fact, correct.
Right. I know. Yeah, I realize that, but when you answer a court case by paper, you've answered, okay? I wouldn't worry, at least in New York, they don't really go to that extremes for a traffic violation. What they do is, if you don't pay, they'll give you a fine whether you show up or not, and then they will notify motor vehicles, and they'll suspend your license until you pay that fine. And then I usually wait till the last minute if they don't leave me alone, and I pay the fine. And I've got a cabinet, in my file cabinet, I got about five of them. I've got others, but they've never, they've just gone away. But I must have four or five in my cabinet, and I'm going to sue them all at the same time, along with motor vehicles.
I just don't
have the time right now.
Then on top of that, right after I get out of jail, my dear husband bails me out, we get in the mail this failure to appear warrant for him for this silly similar traffic violation for not having your lights on during the daytime, excuse me, okay, which is stupidity I cannot even believe. And then we actually did show up for that, and she violated all of many rights, you know, and turned in paperwork before that. And they threaten, if you don't show up, to come after you for a warrant for your arrest. They just don't mess around. So this was a failure to appear. Nevada, okay? How much justice can you afford, state? So the failure to arrest warrant in this case is for failure to appear at the pretrial hearing, and this is after I did the verified action jurisdiction.
Well, look, I would take all this and I'd sue him in federal court. Since you've been incarcerated, that's it. You've got a federal case.
Well,
you've been
not.
And there's a conspiracy.
Well, there certainly is.
Look, once the cop works with the judge and the prosecutor, and they work together to put you in jail, to incarcerate you, to intimidate you, to try to take your money, extort you, that's all federal offenses.
And then, well, this particular one for my husband was initially just a $75 or $85 ticket, and this failure to appear warrant is for $1,000 cash bail. It's like, oh, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're insane. I would do. I would sue them all, and if these things are still outstanding and it's still a threat for you, I'd sue them real quick. I'd get them in federal court. Sue them all.
Okay. Is there a way?
And you go after them for criminal charges. This is just not civil. You know, these judges, even in the federal courts, they like to turn your case into just a civil case. And, you know, it's not a civil case. There's criminal charges right here. Oh, well, you know, this isn't the criminal court, or you got to get a prosecutor. No, I could prosecute my own case.
Mm-hmm.
And you can. All of that is true.
Okay. My husband, because of this warrant for him, he is more than concerned, I can tell you. But the main thing is, if I thought that I might be able to start with because there's not been an arrest, it's just a warrant, I could start with either a quo warranto, which I started online today from the examples you have there, to see if she will go ahead and come to her senses and come get off this thing. And I can declare, because with the other thing I had done, it had been quashed, because of the jurisdiction.
Yeah, you don't want to use a quo warranto. No. Look at what you do. You got to do a federal case is what you got to do, and you assume for all the reasons I mentioned to you, that's the way to go. These courts don't have any authority whatsoever. They're not common law courts. They don't even have a common law side to the courts. It's all corporate charter. It's all about making money. It's a corporation is what it is. They're making money off the people. They're just fleecing them.
I know. It's extortion. It's a racket.
Yeah.
I'm very well
so
aware
I wouldn't
of that.
Even I wouldn't even bother. Look, I always send a paper into the court. They usually, often they'll just throw, they won't even never bother me again. They just go away. Sometimes they don't, and they'll try to send it back, and I'll send it back under threat. And then they may just come out and say I have to pay a fine. And then I just pay the fine, and I move on. But I'm going to sue them. I just haven't got the time to sue them. So. But okay, anyway, with that, I'd like to go. It's late. And we're beyond our time.
Okay,
if you want,
much,
yeah. Next time we'll be back on next Saturday. I mean next Thursday. So,
thank you very much.
Okay.
We'll see you later. Bye bye.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for calling and thanks for coming. Good night.